The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here with an amazingly important deep dive. We have someone incredibly important on the line. And before I introduce him, I want to introduce someone who is also very important, my partner in all things Survivor South Africa, as we head into our fifth month of coverage. It is the great Mike Bloom.
Jen, I am elated to be here. But you know what? It's proper that we're on a network called Rob Has a Podcast, because I think much like Survivor South Africa, we should give everything to Rob, including this podcast.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't win the podcast from us at some point during the season. And with that in mind, please welcome the winner of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets, and the winner of the Chizzy, more importantly, one of the best players I have ever seen in the history of the show, the true king, Rob Bentele.
Hey, Shannon, Mike, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on to the podcast. We have so many questions about your game. I mean, we were privileged to see as much of it as we did and so much of the brilliance behind it. And I'm sure there'll be even more on this podcast.
Looking forward to this. I've really been excited for this for a while. So let's dive right into it.
Well, before we get into the show proper, it's been a few weeks since you ended up being officially crowned the winner of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. You have a million rand, you have two cars, you have a closet filled with leopard print tank tops, I'm assuming. What's your life been like since you've been officially declared the winner?
Since the win, it's incredible because I've been really busy with quite a lot of press and a lot has been going on. So I'm actually kind of, before this, I actually didn't drink coffee, but I've kind of been living on coffee for quite a while now. It's been insane. But I'm grateful nonetheless. I really am grateful for everything that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think I want to go all the way back to before you started on the show, because we never really got an understanding of what your history was with the show. Like, how much of a fan were you before you went on?
Yeah, so I did watch some early Survivor. In South Africa, it started airing around 2001. So I remember watching the season where Rich won. And I saw a lot of Rob's game as well. His first season with Amber. And that was, I was captivated at that point. Rob has always been a true inspiration to me. I really loved how he played the game. So you can imagine how happy I was when I got some comparisons with Rob. And then I kind of lost track with it for a number of years. And I watched Survivor Champions, enjoyed that one. And then the last one was Survivor Philippines. And that one just got me hooked onto Survivor again.
So what I find so interesting is, we saw a little bit of like preseason interviews that all the contestants did. And something that really stuck out about your little clip that we saw was you said that you felt you could bring something new to the game. Now, having seen some very recent Survivor South Africa seasons, can you talk on what exactly that quote unquote new thing was? And if at the end of the day, you were able to bring it out as much as you hoped you did?
Yeah, so I didn't have a lot of Survivor experience. I watched a bit when I was younger. And obviously the last two seasons, the way I went into the game wanting to play it was to apply universal laws that I know about, the energy you give, the energy you receive, how to get into your own mind as well as other people's mind. So that was my angle. I was coming in there as a bit of a yogi, put it that way.
Yeah. And so you've seen like a little bit of the game. You must have had like a real natural instinct with these other skills that you say you're bringing to the table with what we happen to see. So with the application process, like how did that go for you? Did you think you had a real shot to get into the show?
Most definitely. My belief is you become what you think about. So I was constantly envisioning myself on the show and I was constantly thinking of myself, in fact, winning the show. There was never a doubt in my mind that I'd get on the show. And I kept holding on to the thought of winning the game the entire time. So the moment you doubt it or you doubt yourself, you've already disturbed the manifestation process, I believe. So I believed it in myself the entire time.
Well, in terms of preparation, what I'm intrigued by is obviously you are a very muscular, very big guy. I know you talked about like having some MMA in your past as well. And I feel like it's always been up in the air with previous Survivor players, especially with the more athletic ones, as to, you know, do you purposely starve yourself before going out to get used to the starvation? There's obviously a lot during the season revolving around, you know, certain people taking rewards from other people. Did you do any sort of preparation once that manifestation happened? You ended up finding out you were going on to the show?
Yeah, I started preparing the moment I applied. When I got the first email back just to say that I've been, you know, recognized, I already started getting very serious about the training. So previously, I would just do mainly resistance training, but I decided to switch it up because I realized I needed more stamina, I needed more endurance, I needed more agility. So I started adding a lot of running and swimming to my workouts. So that was the physical, was weight resistance training, running and swimming like crazy.
Did you go back and rewatch any of the seasons you've missed, or you just kind of went with what you had already learned from the show?
No, I did rewatch season 6. I did rewatch that one.
Mm. So, you know, obviously you were manifesting it and you felt like you could really get on. But what is that moment like where you get, I guess, a call or a visit? It seems to be different for everyone, to confirm that you are definitely 100% going out onto the show.
Yeah, it was a Saturday afternoon and I actually fell down. I literally just fell on the floor. Thank goodness I was alone, because people would have thought I was having a heart attack or something, but mm-hmm. I fell down because I just realized that I just stepped into the reality where I'm on Survivor.
So that reality happens. You end up, you know, getting onto Survivor. You're in Samoa. You know, you definitely are eyeing your tribe. And I believe that the first episode, as we're starting to get into it, is the point in time when, you know, you're saying, hey, we have a pretty stacked crew, especially compared to, I believe you called the science fair of Ta'alo. But the very first thing that you get asked as a tribe is, hey, pick one leader. And I know that you had said in the episode that you were purposely pushing that position onto Paul, which is going to be the first of many, many sort of inner machinations that you work over the course of the season. What was sort of your suspicion that led you to want to say, I don't want this title to begin with, let me try to give it to this guy?
Yeah, so I knew naturally going into the game, I obviously would stand out, and I didn't want to further amplify that by making myself a leader. To me, Paul looked like a good option because he was, you know, he's more mature than us. He's, you know, far wiser, you know, as an older man, he's physically fit. He looks to me like somebody we could all respect and all sort of look to as a leader. So Paul seemed like a perfect option.
Yeah, so this is obviously, you know, the first day and that first challenge, and you're on the beach with Saula. So what are those initial dynamics like at Saula? Obviously, an alliance and tribe is going to be incredibly important to the season. The amigos come together really quickly. So how does that kind of come together?
Naturally, when you step into the game, you're obviously sizing everybody up. You're trying to get a feel for everyone. You're trying to read as much as you can in the shortest space of time to try and make an assessment. You know, where do you want to put your eggs? Which basket do you want to invest in here? Because you can initially see people that you feel won't go far, people that you can see you won't really get along with. So you start choosing your mates very early in the game. I was happy with Sahula. I was really happy. I was like, no, I'm on a solid tribe. I think that I can go follow these people. Nate and I bonded very quickly. Nicole and I also, I mean, Steffi as well. You guys saw it happened in a very short space of time. And sizing up the other tribes, at first, I really was not worried about them at all. I thought that we're just going to physically destroy them. We're going to dominate every single challenge with ease. But as you so it never worked out that way. But in a way, I'm kind of glad it didn't, because it strengthened us.
Yeah, we need to get into the Nate stuff, because, I mean, obviously this is going to become the big runner, I would say, maybe one of the biggest Survivor bromances we've seen in at least a couple of years at this point, even internationally speaking. You spoke upon bonding really quickly, but what was it about his personality that, you know, got you so close to the point of even on day 2, you said, look, I'll carry you on my back all 39 days if that's what it takes?
Yeah. So we were both, I feel, in that tribe, we were both sort of equally matched in strength, and we sort of were all the same age. We into the same thing. So he's also into video production. So we along the same lines. And I think production knew that with when it came to Nate and I, we'd either get along very, very well or completely hate one another. There was going to be no middle point between the two of us. So, and luckily it turned out to be, I think when he got injured as well, it sort of showed me that, whoa, you know, this is, he's now weak. I need to help him. I need to help him get through this thing. If he wasn't so injured, I think there could have possibly been a bit of rivalry between us. But the moment he got injured, it sort of showed me that, okay, Rob, no, you need to get your friend up and you need to fight this thing with him. You guys need to go. And, you know, in an environment like Survivor, if you're stripped away from everything, you're stripped away from your friends, your family, comforts, you're hungry. So when you do find someone in that environment that you get along with, that you feel you can trust, you will protect that person with your life. You'll hold on to them as best as you can, as long as you can, because in a way, that's all you really have. You don't want to be alone again.
Yeah, I mean, so you're on Saula and you've got the Amigos, and there's like Sipe and Leanne who are on the outs. Like, did you have a particular connection with them early on as well, or was it very much like Amigo strong?
Yeah, in a way, I kind of, Leanne also didn't really make much of an attempt to come and, you know, get to know us, I think. She played a bit too slow. But I didn't see the point in forming really strong bonds with them, because I wanted to sort of keep them as the first people that would go if anything went wrong, so that the Amigos don't have to look at each other and take each other out. So to me, it was like, okay, the four of us are strong, myself, Nicole, Nate, and Steffi, and we bring Paul in as well, that's five, and then we've got a bit of, you know, room to play with, you know, Sipe and Leanne. So I didn't actually work on those relationships initially.
What was your reaction to Paul coming back and you trying to do the big tribe idol dig? I know Nicole told me that, you know, she was looking back, you know, very hopeful that maybe in a different world she would have been alone when she dug up that idol, so she could have kept it a secret. Would you have done the same thing if Paul told you where it was and you dug it up on your own? Would you have held on to it?
Without a doubt. If I found that idol by myself, I would have held on to it and just kept it a secret. I think that is the smartest thing you could do in the game. But luckily, we found it in the manner that we did, because it became an idol. It became our common secret, our common strength as well. We knew that we have this idol, we can work together. It was sort of the glue that held the relationship together, because we knew we have something in common, this idol we can all use as a tribe going forward.
Yeah, I'm so interested about this idol. Maybe this is skipping forward a little bit, but you end up getting the idol from Paul. And, like, even in our commentary of it, you know, in a few episodes when Paul is gone and we're not talking about Paul anymore, it's very much like we're talking about Rob's idol. But, you know, that's you know, Paul got it back. Nicole technically found it. It's the Saula idol that was put around your neck. At any point was anyone like, was Steffi like, can I have the idol? Like, it's the Saula idol, you know, or was it very much seen as a tribe idol the entire time rather than yours?
I think we entrusted it with Paul initially because we felt, you know, he's the leader. We elected him the leader. He brought back the clue. So technically it's kind of his idol. Let him hold on to it. And we just kind of hoped and trusted that if push came to shove, he would use it for one of us. So when the idol moved from Paul to myself and he, you know, it wasn't planned, but he got voted out and it ended up with me. I think that at that point, we all felt like, okay, the tribe was comfortable to keep it with me. No one ever once asked A-Rob, can I hold on to the idol or anything? We kind of felt that, you know, okay, look, with Paul gone, Rob is trustworthy enough to hold on to this thing in the hopes that he will use it. And I genuinely was. I would use it for any Saula member, and I'm going to end up using it for one of the Saula members. I would have, to protect the family, I would have used it for anyone.
Getting to that first tribal council, like you said, I think you purposely kept Sipe and Leanne on the outs. And I know Nicole told me that it really was as up in the air at tribal council as we saw. Can you talk to me a bit about your own mental process as you're sitting there in your very first vote in Survivor South Africa history? And it's so up in the air.
You know, going into your first tribal council, you aren't mentally prepared. You aren't hardened for it. You're more nervous than anything. So your first tribal council, your head is spinning, which is why I understand that later on in the game, when we went into tribal councils, like first time tribal council, people like Rocco and things like that, they were easy for us to go up against because we were comfortable in that environment already. So your first tribal council is nerve-wracking already, you know, and we came in there. Clearly, we all had different ideas in mind. Nate was very bent on keeping Sipe in the game. Leanne was supposed to go. I wanted Sipe gone, and Nate wanted to keep Sipe. The ladies, I don't know exactly where they were. Maybe they were undecided at the time. But that CPAC did what she does best. And that is the first sign where that was the first indicator that I started realizing, okay, CPAC is actually good. She's got the wits. She can speak amazingly well. So that's where she showed us her strength, was at that first tribal council.
Yeah, your relationship with CPAC is going to be so important. As someone, you're saying that you wanted to go home in the first tribal council. How did it evolve from there to get to a point where, I think through a lot of the early merge, it really seemed like she was, you know, if not your number one, pretty close to that.
Yeah. So CPAC, you judge people's strengths, and I hadn't spoken to her enough to actually see her true strength, which was inside her personality. I was judging on her physically, you know, okay, in challenges, she's not really going to be the best, etc. So I'd assessed her on what the information I had, which was literally just a physical assessment that she wouldn't be the strongest person to go into tribes. But the moment I saw her operate in tribal council, that is where I found her strength. I said, no, her strength is insight. It's her personality. She's unbelievably powerful. This is someone we need going forth in the game. And that's where we realized that, no, CPAC must stay. She is a trooper. She's as strong, if not stronger than all of us here. So we need her.
So despite that sense of, you know, strength taken from various areas, Saula does end up losing the next couple of challenges. But more significantly, you get sent to Island of Secrets. You're the first person to go to Island of Secrets solo. You take a gamble and you lose your vote. What was that experience like, both being on Island of Secrets and losing your vote? And what ultimately led you to be honest to Saula about what happened on Island of Secrets? Because it turns out you're going to probably be one of the only people this season to be honest at some point about what happened on Island of Secrets.
Yeah. So when it came to them sending me to the Island of Secrets the first time, remember, I came into that game trying to underplay myself, you know, more of a follower and just fly under the radar. When they sent me to the Island of Secrets, I realized there that this tactic is not going to work. I must just own it. I must just step up and be the leader here, because if I deny myself, if I deny it and I try, then I think I'm going to go under the radar. That was not going to work. So they kind of showed me that, okay, Rob, we see you, we notice you. So I realized then that, okay, now it's time to step up here and start taking control, taking charge of this tribe. So I came back far stronger than I went on Set Island, because they gave me time to think and I assessed my position in the game.
Yeah, and you have a choice to play to risk your vote, which you lose, and you come back with this, like, no vote parchment. And even what you're risking it for, it's not a huge advantage, I would say. Like, the ability to send someone to the Island of Secrets, I'm sure you would have used it really creatively, but it's not like an idol or anything. What was your thought process to, you know, play that game and then obviously in losing your vote?
So I knew I was in a good position with the tribe, so we didn't really need the numbers that badly. I knew that even without my vote, we will still have full control at any tribal, at the tribal councils. But I was very happy that luckily that was used early. So it wasn't something that was going to cripple me for long. So I wasn't really worried. There wasn't much I could lose, but there was more I could gain. So to me, that was a very straightforward decision. Just go for it. Take the shot.
In the small amount of time that you, like, you know, hadn't lost your vote, did you have any really creative ideas of how you would use something like sending someone to the Island of Secrets? Because, you know, if anyone, I'm sure, could have really used this quite creatively, it probably would have been you.
Yeah, I don't like to decide things on the spot. So I was going to obviously go back, sleep on it, give it some thought. So I hadn't really figured out what I was going to do with it. I think if I'd gotten it, then I would have really sat on it and pondered and tried to think of the best way to use it, best time and how to use it. I was going to give it thought. I was going to cross that bridge when I get to it, basically.
Mm. And to be fair, I think for the rest of the pre-merge, you know, next episode, Saul is going to win and be able to send Tanya. Then the next round is the swap when you're going to be able to send CPAC. So it's almost like you had that advantage anyway. It was just purely by the numbers of things rather than actually having a tangible advantage.
Major advantage, which is pretty classic.
So you get back to camp. Saula is facing its second tribal council in a row. And it really does seem like at that point, Nathan might need to be put out to pasture. And I'll admit, as close as it was to see your bromance in the first couple episodes, I was very surprised to see you, you know, tearful, crying over the fact of losing him so early on. Now, granted, that won't be the case later on in the episode, but were you even surprised with your emotional reaction to the idea of Nathan leaving so early?
Yes, yeah. People don't understand, because in an environment like Survivor, spending 5 days with that person and on Survivor is probably equivalent to spending 50 days with that person in the real world. Bonds are formed far quicker because you guys suffer together. It's those cold nights that they aren't able to show you guys, waiting for the sun to come up, you know, because we're so cold at night. It's things like that that forge the bond even stronger with the entire tribe. So losing Nate literally to me was like losing my brother. And by that time, we were as close as brothers.
Yeah, so, you know, going into this, it does really look like Nathan is going home, something you definitely don't want to happen. You know, from your perspective, how did this all turn around?
We went into tribal council truly believing that he's going. I had already said my goodbyes. I had accepted the fact that he's leaving. And during the tribal council, Nico is fantastic at what he does. I really do think he was trying to show us that what is more valuable than the physical aspects is, you know, trust. That's the most valuable currency in that game, is showing us that. He kept trying to say to the guys, you know, let go of him that easy. That foot will heal. He's not his foot. So giving some time on that, and I think we all just started feeling it, like this is the wrong choice. Nate can't go now. He was not meant to leave this game so soon. There's still a lot more we can do. And during the tribal council, that's when the decision was made to take out Paul.
I also know that Nicole told me that right before tribal council, you guys were sort of comparing notes about the fact that, you know, Paul had this thing in with Nicole and Steffi, but it seemed like he was making bonds with you and Nate as well. Can you talk to me a bit more about what Paul's dealings were, considering we didn't see that much in the episode?
Yes, so Paul did approach Nate and I and said, hey, guys, look, you know, anything happens, let's stick as the guys, you know, let's sort of make a three-pack here. So if we do pass, if we do end up having to take out CPay, then we target the girls. So we did this, you know, that already raises a bit of flags to you because you're like, guys, we still far away from that. Why are we doing this now? You know, that's a bit too soon for me. And then the girls told us that, no, he came and did the same with us. So that's when we started seeing that, okay, maybe Paul isn't as trustworthy as we thought he is.
Right. And you've spoken a little bit about how, you know, obviously losing at the beginning was hard, but you think it was, you know, it worked out well in the end. Do you think Saula could have had the same success if they'd gone in with someone like Paul where, you know, there's mistrust and gone into a swap like that and not really had, you know, been forged in fire with those first couple of tribal councils?
No, I only realized this after the game. He was going to play very aggressively and he would have probably been one of the first to turn on when the time was right. So I'm glad that we took him out because he was gonna start playing aggressively. I'm sure of it, without a doubt. He was gonna bring some heat there.
So episode 3, Saula finally is able to recover. Maybe you got the bad seed Paul out of the tribe, and you finally get Flint. And this is where we start getting the big narrative of Rob as the fire guy. So was, because we've heard of Survivor Castaways, you know, purposely practicing fire making before going out into the island. Is that part of why you described yourself as that? Is that just something you've always done in your life, was learn how to start fires?
Well, I've always been fascinated with fire, looking at flames, just staring into the flame and letting your mind go off.
Do you secretly work for Steers with that mentality?
Exactly.
No. But I did take time out to actually learn how to make a fire properly. We were struggling to make fire on that island until I eventually task for it. Once I brought that back, we just needed a bit of sunlight for long enough for it to dry out properly, then we're able to make fire. So fire to me, thing that I bring to the tribe. So everyone brought something to the tribe, like everyone sort of had tools that, you know, their responsibilities. So to me, I was happy to sort of claim fire as my thing to do.
So you end up, you know, finally forged in fire, quite literally, is Saula. You guys are able to survive, you know, through a tribal council without going. Then it turns out, boom, you end up swapping. Now, of course, we're going to get into all the stuff that happened on New to Alo and you suddenly being on the outs with Nicole. But what was your reaction to the swap ended up turning out with, you know, you and Nicole on one side, Nate and Steph on another tribe, and then CPay on another tribe by herself?
So as the swap happened, I was initially most worried about Sipe because she was alone. The rest of us had partners. So I had Nicole and Steffi had Nate. So I wasn't too worried about us. I was worried about Sipe, but, you know, in typical fashion, Sipe, we threw her to the wolves and she came back leading the pack. That is Sipe for you right there.
Yeah, because you are going to not be actually in a great position of everyone, I think, on this new Ta'alo tribe. You're in this, like, duo dynamic, Rocco and Letitia, Dante and Meryl, and you have Nicole. So what is this dynamic on the new Ta'alo?
New Ta'alo. I very quickly saw that it wasn't so easy to bond with Dante and Meryl. The power struggle was for Rocco and Letitia. So we kind of saw that whoever they side with will be in the majority. So I was trying to work Rocco a lot, but it was very hard to beat him and Dante. They're from the same area. They know the same places. They were too close, you know, in that aspect that no matter what I did, it could never beat, you know, people that know each other or are from the same area and know so much about the same things. Those guys were talking all day. It was ridiculous. So I very quickly realized I can't beat them on the social aspect here.
Dante's going to end up being your primary rival, I would say, for this phase of the game. And we'll certainly get into the Flint Gate of it all. But what was your first impression of him on a personal level?
I tried to form a relationship with him, but we very quickly saw that we're fighting up against each other here right now, because he had Meryl, I had Nicole that I wanted to present. And the swing votes was Rocco, basically, because we knew that Letitia would pretty much go where Rocco goes. So we were fighting against each other for sort of Rocco's vote. It didn't even really give us a chance to genuinely bond. I think if you put Dante and I out of the game, leave us alone, I really believe we could get along well. I do respect him as a person. He is phenomenal. I mean, I'll tell you later on in the game how I actually had to actively try and keep him from forging, because he is a nice guy. He's a funny person, great personality. But I kind of had to beat him on that aspect socially eventually.
One of the things I'm so interested about when we get to the swap is that you seem to be telling people that Paul left with the idol, which makes a lot of sense. But we see Nathan being like, we don't know where the idol is. Like, it's somewhere, but we don't know. So did Saula have a plan before going into the swap of what to tell about the idol?
No, that was our mistake. We really didn't see the swap coming. So we never actually discussed that. Hey, guys, what are we going to tell these people, you know, happened to the idol, which was a bit of a problem.
So in terms of sending Sipe to Island of Secrets, you know, I feel like this is one of the first really interesting plays that you make. And you talk about this in a secret scene where, you know, you're able to just take advantage of the pure spontaneous notion of the moment and basically say, hey, Tanya's on the bottom. And so if you want to get rid of Tanya, you should send Sipe. Did you feel like, you know, anyone had any sort of suspicions towards you when you were one of the first people to speak up about who to send to Island of Secrets from your new tribe?
Most definitely. Look, so I try to lead as subtly as possible, just nudge in the right direction. If you show too much force, you risk you're strong arming the tribe and you risk losing them. They will resist. The harder you push, is the more they will resist. So naturally, I always try, you know, put suggestions in very subtly. But with that instance, I didn't want to lose Sipe. So to me, it was worth the risk to just, you know, sort of push it out there and say, guys, let's send Sipe there. So I was very vocal, very, very strong on that one. So they went with me. But at the same time, you can't do that too much.
So I want to get also to the Flint Gate of it all. You know, Dante stealing the Flint and how this seemed to really emotionally affect you. If you could take us through that. But also, is this something that you knew had happened before you actually watched it on the show?
Funny enough, no. So I had my suspicions, but it was very hard for me to really believe that someone would sabotage a winning tribe that much just to get to me. And he's very lucky, because when I went camping with my dad just before Survivor, I lost a Flint then. So I kind of realized that I do have the tendency of losing Flint. So I didn't think it's possible. But I also, it was hard for me to leave because we genuinely starved. Rocco was starving. I was starving. And I mean, we were a strong tribe. We were winning everything up until that point. But once you take food away from us, obviously we can't perform as well now. So to me, it was very hard to believe that he would actually do that. That's why. But at the final tribal council, he did actually mention that, look, Rob, you played well in everything, but I crippled you just by taking away a flint. And I told him, no, I had not given up on the game. I just wanted you to come at me because I was going to play my idol. And I think he respected that.
On the note of Dante's closest ally, I know when I spoke with Nicole, we talked about how, you know, you guys actually didn't see that Meryl had taken the idol during that really long slide puzzle challenge in the rain. So what was your reaction and surprise like when you get back to camp and Meryl says, okay, guys, I know you saw me, so yes, I have the idol.
I was genuinely shocked. I didn't understand why she's telling us. But it obviously now makes sense because she thought that we saw, but we genuinely did not see her get that idol.
Yeah, and you know, you say you're crippled by the lack of fire, but you do win a lot onto Arlo 2.0. You become like really ambassadors for the sponsors, the Biostrath reward, the Steers reward. You've got a lot of talks about that. What was the best reward that you had on this tribe?
Definitely for me, the Steers. That was the first real food that we had gotten since getting in the game, you know, where we could eat as much as we want or much as we can. So that was definitely by far the most incredible reward.
Yeah, I think we got some different accents. I mean, some different languages, bilingual coming out with the Steers love. I like that.
Yeah. I spoke quite a bit of Zulu in there. To me, it's I actually switch languages sometimes without even realizing it because I'm just as good with either language. So I think in Zulu sometimes as well.
And Steers brings that out. So, it's amazing.
Yeah. The multiculturalism in South Africa. That's what it should be focusing on instead of all the fire stuff. So after you have these Steers, Nicole, you know, comes back from Island of Secrets where she ends up meeting with Nathan. And she tells this big lie, as she says, one of the biggest lies that she's ever told. What was your reaction to the, you know, story she ended up spinning, considering not only how much on the outs you guys were, but how much you were going back and forth as to which one of you was going to be targeted?
Yeah, initially I was so shocked why she's telling these people so much information. I was like, no, keep quiet, Nicole. You're supposed to tell me. But then when she told me that, you know, it's basically half an idol, but she has the whole idol, et cetera, I understood. It was an okay story. They could have come up with something a bit better than that because they eventually saw we weren't even looking for the idol. We generally weren't barely even looking for it. So it raised more red flags. They could have thought of a better story than that, but at least we had an idol now. So I was safe. She was safe. If they'd come for us, we would have just had to figure out, you know. That's why I initially just wanted to put the target on me so they can come for me, play my idol, take out Dante, and then they would have been scrambling.
Considering they did have the numbers too, but the vote, like, do you think that if you'd gone to tribal council, the drawing the votes plan would have worked out? Or do you, I mean, you're not, you know, really the right person to ask being on the wrong side of that number, but do you really think it could have worked?
I can honestly tell you that the time we spent in Tahalo with Nicole, that was the most vulnerable I was ever in the game. The rest of the time I was very, very well insulated. So it was not a good time for Nicole and I there, but that also it strengthened our bond because we went through that together. We were on the outs together. All we had was each other. We had to protect each other's back at all costs because we knew all we have is one another. So that really added to the bond that you see Nicole and I have in that game.
So you end up swapping once more. You end up staying on to Alo, but you trade in some allies and some enemies for other people. And, you know, this is when you and Nate, even though you're going to be separated for the final time in the game, you're going to have a bit of a conversation where you tell him, gun for Dante. He tells you, go to Kubis and Mike. If Nathan hadn't given you those instructions, would you have pursued them or were you really just taking his words at face value?
I obviously did take into consideration what he said. But I think one way or another, whether NATO told me or not, Mike and I would have become close. Naturally, Mike and I get along very well. That I didn't need NATO to tell me that. That would have happened all on its own. Mike is really a phenomenal person. So naturally, I would have gravitated towards him. He would have gravitated towards me. So I don't think that conversation really altered the course of the game that much. If anything, it sort of just also brought Corbis in a bit more. But Mike and I were inevitable. We were going to become good mates there.
Yeah, and Mike does come to you and tell you kind of what Nathan has told him about the idol. You know, your lie was a lot better, Rob, in terms of what had happened with the idol if you guys didn't discuss it before. And he really does catch you off guard. Like, at first you're lying to him, and then you start bringing him in to a degree. So what's your thought process in that moment being blindsided with that information?
So with Mike, I really try to play it slow. So I try to show him that he's going through the layers of me. So initially, when he brought up the idol thing, I realized then, I don't want to lie to him because there's too much information for him to realize that I'm lying. So instead of lying to him, I said, look, bro, I played open cards with him. I will tell you in time. So I was also showing that I'm a trustworthy person. If you invest time in me, I'll give your trust back. So I'm glad I played it that way because it sort of strengthened the relationship over time. So it wasn't easily earned. At the same time, if you give someone too much too easily, they don't appreciate it. They don't appreciate what they have. But if you reveal it slowly over time, that shows them that, look, I earned his trust. Look, I earned, it's something I work towards. So it's far more valuable. He didn't just give it to me freely. That's how I played with Mike.
So you get CPay back for the first time since the original days of Sawula. And when you split, you were feeling pretty good about your relationship. Then, like, the first night you're as a new tribe, she goes into this big sermon about how, maybe we should start getting rid of the bigger guys. And obviously that's going to help lead to you targeting Rocco. But what was your reaction to this, considering maybe, people could apply CPay's words to yourself, considering how big of a guy you were?
Yeah, it was very surprising because the same words she was using to describe Rocco were also applying to me. So I was like, whoa, what's going on here now, CPay? Chief, what's happening, boss? But I was just trusting and hoping that she was aiming it at Rocco. But it obviously wasn't nice because I did realize that these same words are applying to me right now. She's kind of in a way putting me on the chopping block as well. But I wanted to trust. CPay came back a lot stronger. We from our original swap to when I was with her again, she had gathered a lot of allies. I could see she had very strong ties with Jacques. And so she came back far stronger than she was when we initially split up. And I recognized that strength. So I also didn't want to challenge her in any way. It was a very delicate relationship between CPay and I because we kind of felt we could feel that together we own this tribe. But if we go up against each other, it won't be nice. So I think we're kind of scared of each other for a while there. So it was a gentle sort of balance. We're kind of tiptoeing around one another in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on Jacques, you spoke about Kubus before. These are new people that you're meeting in the game and people you're going to work with and against in the future. And relationships we didn't see as much personally on the screen as like your Mikes and Daraos and obviously Saula. So how did you connect personally with Jacques and Kubus?
My connection with Jacques was definitely via CPay. I knew that, also remember at the time, you don't want to exhaust yourself in a way where you look like you are running to everyone to try and form bonds. So if for example, I know that, okay, I've got a good relationship with CPay and she's got a good relationship with Jacques. I don't need to bother going and forming that personal relationship with Jacques because I've got it via CPay anyway. I just need to nurture my relationship with CPay and technically I've got Jacques. You don't want to be that person who's running to every single one talking, walking off there because now you look like you're playing the whole field. So it's smarter to invest with, certain individuals, key individuals, than to spread yourself throughout the entire field because then you just look very cheap that way. So I didn't really work on my relationship too much with Jacques. I wasn't taking one-on-one walks with him much because I knew I already had that relationship via CPay anyway. I invested in Mike rather. Corbis too. But Corbis was interesting because he never really locked in on his relationships. He was he was playing the field a bit too much. You know, he would have relationships with everyone. So he was kind of doing the opposite. He was having relationships with everyone and not really solidifying proper bonds where you say it's you and me. So yes, he was a good double agent, but I was also very afraid that your double agent could very quickly become your triple agent. What is he saying to the others? He's not really locking in on your relationship too well.
So this Rocco vote is, I would say, from an edit perspective, one of the first big votes of many that you're going to mastermind over the course of this season. And I know there was some debate at the time as to, you know, are you getting rid of somebody that could be perceived as a big threat above you? And talking with Jacques and Mike, we also knew that Rocco actually seemed like he was ready to kind of throw in the towel at that moment, which may have caused him to be targeted. What was your rationale behind targeting Rocco, and were you worried at all that getting rid of him might put a bigger target on your back moving forward?
No, I didn't think of it that way. I assessed Rocco. I'm grateful for the time I spent with Rocco, as well as, I'll tell you later, I'm very grateful for the time I spent with Meryl in Talo 2.0, because I got to learn them. Luckily, I got to learn them. So Rocco, he's a very genuine, honest person. He's got a pure heart, and you want to align yourself with someone like that because you know they won't lie to you. That coupled with his physical capabilities, he was in a key position to go very far in that game, because people naturally also gravitated to Rocco because they realized they could trust him. He was not going to play them. If Rocco gives you your word, you're pretty good. You're pretty solid there. You're fine. So why would you want to get rid of a Rocco? So I realized that now Rocco needs to go as soon as possible, because naturally people are gravitating towards him, and those are the people you need to eliminate quickly. You need to get rid of your biggest threats the moment you have a shot at them. I didn't need Rocco as a shield. I didn't want him as a shield. He was far more dangerous than a shield.
Yeah. Someone else I'm really curious about your relationship with is Letitia, who you obviously, you know from the tribe before, and who is someone whose perspective we really didn't get a lot of on the show, but she is one of the last to turn on you, you know, towards the very end. Did you have a personally very tight relationship with her that we just didn't see as much of on the show?
Yeah, unfortunately, they didn't get to show you guys a lot of Letitia and I's relationship. So Letitia was the first person to come to me and say to me that, look, Rob, Rocco, I could see it, but she was the first to come and actually verbally confirm it. She said, look, Rocco and Dante are getting along way too well. So I already know that Rocco will go with Dante and Meryl. So for me to come and join you and Nicole, as much as I obviously have a good relationship with you, for me to come and join you guys is not too smart. Why would I leave a 4-2 and go to a 3-3 split? It made no sense. And I even said to her, I said, look, you're completely right. Stay where you are. I'm not even going to try and convince you to come to where we are. But thank you very much for the information. So already there, that's where the bond was created. I realized that, you know, Letitia has my back. I can have her back as well. So it was very intricate into forming our relationship. Letitia and I had a far better relationship than is visible.
Plus, you know, you're able to take that opportunity and be like, okay, she's in her final hours, her final days. Let me try to, you know, make her experience as much of Survivor as possible.
Mike, don't start there. Don't even start with that.
You started it first.
Oh, man.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Well, so after the Rocco vote, you know, another person you had a very interesting relationship with, you get Steffi back from Island of Secrets. And Steffi is someone who, you know, you were tied with before. She was an amigo. But you said on the episode that you were a little surprised at how fast paced she was. She comes to you and says, OK, we immediately need to get rid of Mike, who you said you bonded with. Obviously, there's going to be a big split between the two of you later on. But was this the beginning of you starting to think a little bit differently about Steffi than you did before?
Yeah, so Steffi is a sprinter, and it shows in her game. She comes in very hard, and she comes in sometimes a little aggressively. Like, she's already thinking miles ahead before. It almost feels as if she is already talking game before she's even greeted me. Say, hey, Rob, hi, I haven't seen you for a while. How's things? You know, how's life? It's like she just comes in and is like, okay, this is what we're doing. And we're like, whoa, slow down, Steffi. What's up? How are you? Let's start there. So that's how aggressively she does play. So I also do remember towards the end of the Saula days, I had a bit of, I was a bit worried about Steffi. I started to see, she kind of felt that she was in the outs, you know, like we had sort of traded places with her and CPay. So I was kind of worried, you know, as she turned on us, will she turn on us? I didn't really know where we stand. So she just arrives in there at this new tribe and boom, she's just jumping straight into the game.
Yeah, I mean, this new tribe is going to become this Pacheco 7. Steffi definitely seems like very on board with it. There are some people who seem particularly on board with it. And we're going to talk about how, you know, tomorrow you find out that Nathan has been voted out. But like in that moment, how are you thinking you're going to utilize this Pacheco 7 at the merge?
So initially, look, it's you never say no to an alliance. You never say no to numbers. The seven was a very good safety net to have. So I was never going to sever that thing easily or purposely. But I did know that the seven can't work for me because Nate and Nicole are not in the seven. If they were, then I would have taken it far further. But I knew that the seven is going to have to break. And the first person to break it technically has an advantage over it. So it's a first mover advantage. If you break it first, then it falls in your direction.
If you had gone to Tribal Council one more time before the merge, who do you think would have gone?
I actually haven't really thought about it. Please just tell me who was in the seven again, just so I can just refresh my memory.
So it was you, Steffi, Mike, Kubis, Jacques, Letitia. Anyone else I'm missing, Shannon?
Cipe.
Yeah, Cipe.
And Cipe, of course.
Yeah. I think in that setup, it probably might have, it could have been Letitia. It could have been Kubis. Because I know that Cipe would have never let go of Jacques. So yeah, I think it would have either been Letitia or Kubis at that stage. And I would have never let go of Mike. So it most likely would have been Kubis or Letitia.
Yeah, and then something catastrophic is about to happen. You're going to hit the merge, which is great, but get to the merge and realize that Nathan has been voted out, which is, you know, devastating. And you're going to find out Nicole had a part in that, which is crazy in and of itself. So what is the initial reaction to that, like, earth-shattering news?
Yeah, that was the first time that I was in the game that I started asking myself, wait, is this thing staged here right now? Am I part of a... I felt like I was being punked at that second when I found it. Because there was no possibility in my mind that he'd go. Something you don't see is that the day of that tribal council, Tahalo sits around the fire and we actually now making bets as to who's going to go home tonight. So we all had said it was either Meryl or Dante. We were even promising each other, we were actually making bets and realized we don't have money here to bet on, so we'll massage the people who won. So that's how we were. Yeah, we massaged. It was a form of currency there, even though we never actually really got around to massaging. it was literally everyone had put their money on either Dante or Meryl to leave. So you can imagine when I get there and I see Nate is gone, I asked myself for the first time in the game, like, whoa, is this thing staged or something? Because this just is not possible. So yeah, with Nate gone, big shock, as you could see. But then that kind of switched on the other side of me that I needed at that time of the game. It switched on fight mode, I think. And that's the person I needed for that length of the game. Pre-merge, I had spent my time investing in relationships, sort of, and building trust and building social capital. Social capital is also a good currency in that game. That is something that Jacques lost when he played his first idol. People saw that, whoa, you know, you play an idol, you're kind of showing that you kept things from people and you're dangerous. So Jacques' move that early in the game burned his social capital going forward. I spent pre-merge building social capital, which I then used into merge. It helped me go forward into the game.
Wait, so nobody won the massage bet?
No, nobody won. No one predicted Nate going
home. We're all losers. So we all
To be fair, in this most recent episode of US Survivor, sometimes massages are not necessarily things you want. So I guess for some people, it might not have been something they wanted to win. Maybe they purposely tried to throw the massage bet.
Possibly.
But rank the devastation, because it's not just Nate going. It's that Nicole, your other number one ally. I think you have a confessional where you're like, the two people in this game for me, Nate and Nicole. Like, she turns on him. It's not just that he was idled out or that, you know, Jeff and Dante came together. Like, Nicole is a vote. She could have saved him. Like, she's the primary vote in that. So how are you now addressing that relationship with what was, you know, one of your primary allies?
Yeah, I was obviously shocked and I needed answers and Nicole wasn't giving them initially. So it was my head was literally spinning for a while. But eventually we sat down, we spoke a while, and literally a day or days later, and she's, you know, opened up and said, look, Nate wasn't in a good space. You must remember, Nate is a very proud guy. So he would not give up on the game. So he would stay there even knowing very well that, you know, he needs to leave. He was physically injured. He was missing his dad back home for reasons. So he needed to go, but he was not someone who would have said, guys, I'm quitting. So she made the best call for him. And I could see that it came from a place of love. And that to me was what mattered. Like she did it for love. She cared about Nate and she made the call for him to say, look, Nate, I think it's time for you to go home. I know you're proud. I know you won't give up, but it is time for you to go home.
So, you know, despite you sort of building bridges with Nicole, you do end up initially targeting Jeff to get a bit of revenge for him being behind the Nathan vote. But soon enough, your mindset sort of changes and you begin to see Meryl in a different light. Was it one particular conversation or situation that made you realize so quickly how dangerous Meryl could be?
Yes, and that's where I also said that I'm glad I spent time with Meryl, because the time that Meryl spent with me, she told me that she's an avid Survivor fan. She's seen all the seasons. She's practiced puzzles. And this was just, she was just feeding information to me, and it was automatically raising her threat level. So I assessed every person on their threat level, and the person with the highest threat level was the one that had to go home first. So coming into Merge, what I did was, even if you see the way I positioned myself at the Merge Feast, I put myself front and center today in the tribe. It's sort of showing everybody that I've got the numbers. If you're not with this guy, you're on the outs. So I really just put my head on the chopping block and I said, I centered myself to kind of establish that dominance as the alpha male in that tribe and put that signal out there that I'm well insulated. If you're not with me, you're against me and you're on the outs. You best worry. So that'll obviously naturally make people gravitate towards you because they want to be under that sort of protection. And that's how I think I got Doral in with me, etc., because of moves like that. But with Meryl, yeah, she raised her threat level. Initially, I wanted Dante to go, but Dante didn't have any social game. What's far more dangerous than the physical game is the social game. And Meryl was campaigning from the moment Merge hit. And eventually even CPA saw it. It was especially, CPA picked it up properly when Jacques had that. He did explain that he had that night where he had a bit of a problem with his stomach. Meryl jumped to him sort of like, hey, you okay? And sort of overdid it, you know? And that's when CPA looked at me and said, she's getting votes here. She's trying to gather an army. So we need to get rid of her as soon as possible.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we are back.
Yeah, speaking more broadly about your position at the Merge, like, you're well insulated with Saula, with the Spitshaker 7, but you are also, like, a really obvious physical threat, which, you know, the Merge time or early Merge can often be problematic. And, you know, you have obviously just lost Nathan and there's some issues there. So did you feel quite confident, you know, with that strategy to be the alpha male, or were you concerned for your game at this point?
I think this is where I'm really grateful I hadn't seen much Survivor. If you look at someone like Jacques, he's seen a lot of Survivor. So paranoia would get to him. That's why he played his idol at that tribal council. He'd seen so much Survivor. He'd seen all the big blind sides. So he had that fear in him. I really didn't have any fear in me at this stage because I didn't know how easily you can be taken out in that game. So at that point, it was, for me, it was like either all in or all out. So I went in there and I made sure I make it clear that I'm at the top of this tribe. I've got Sipe with me, who's also at the top. You know, she's the head of a number of players. I'm also the head of a number of players. So together we own this tribe. So it was either all in or all out for me at this point. I went full in.
So, you know, on that note of Jacques, he ends up telling you about the extra vote that he got from the very beginning of the game. And this is where you help sort of concoct this plan of, okay, a few of you are still going to vote with Dante and Meryl just to make sure that they're, you know, if they do have advantages, you know about it. Can you talk to me a bit about that process of, I guess, first your reaction to Jacques revealing he had that extra vote and how you decided to use it in that particular way?
So Jacques telling us about that was obviously a good thing, because he's sort of saying, look, this is what I've got. He's playing open cards. He's building a relationship. And we didn't really need the numbers. But I honestly thought that it is normal to be able to split the vote every single time, because I believe it was normal. That's what made it happen. Most survivors, it's not like that. You know, there's a very big power struggle. But there, we were able to split the vote every single time with very much ease. We had enough numbers on our side. Jacques definitely did do himself a favor by coming to tell me. But at the same time, I could see that Jacques was under Sipe. If I want to control Jacques, I just need to keep Sipe close.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I know that, you know, one of our past players and podcasters on this network, Steven Fishback, has always said that a vote split is one of the most complicated and arduous things to arrange. Of, you know, okay, we have to make sure that enough people are voting for the proper target, enough people are voting for the secondary target. But I'll give it to you. You know, I think with one very big exception with what Steffi did, you were able to get the votes going wherever you wanted every single time in this post merge, which is just so crazy to pull off considering all the personalities you were with.
Yeah, I thought it was normal. I really didn't know. I honestly thought that everyone was playing the game as hard as I thought everyone was doing the same thing as me. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that vote splits can be so complicated is because it comes down to trust. You know, then you're splitting your numbers and the numbers become each more valuable because people can turn. But the reason that the vote splits kept working out was because people were so loyal to you, Rob. And you did allude to it earlier, but Doral, you know, your relationship with him was something we credited as possibly your best move in the game. Like, he was such a critical spy for you for so long, and you're only meeting him now, I think. So how are you kind of sensing who Doral is as a person, as a good person for you to bring into your web and to use throughout the game?
Doral and I's relationship generally was one of friendship. That was its foundation. That was its basis. We got along very well. Take us out of the game of Survivor again. We've got a very good friendship there, just like I had with Mike and Nate, etc. So it did. Its foundation was very real, very 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 true. I meant the things I said to Doral, but at the same time, I saw that he was in a key position where he was giving me intel, so I had to nurture that relationship. When he did say at the final tribal council when we first met, he told me that he was on the outs, and I said, no, that will not happen again. Let's stick together, and I'll make sure you're good. So I definitely did nurture that relationship as best as I could, as often as I can, one-on-one.
So in this next episode, the Jeff Boot episode, is when you express to us at the moment your plan to go Saula strong until the end, that you want the final four to be you, Nicole, Steffi, and Sipe. With that grouping, what do you think your chances would have been? Obviously, things are going to change down the line, but did you also choose those people because you thought you had a very good chance of, you know, beating them in the end as well?
No, for me, my only moral, when I came into this game, I knew what we were going to do. I knew there was going to be a lot of lying, a lot of blind sides. So I had to sort of stick to some sort of moral compass. And I told myself, if I can keep the first promise I made in this game, I came in there with the Amigos. We formed the Amigos. If I can hold true to that initial promise, then at least in my mind, it justifies everything I do, because then it becomes us versus them. So if my goal was always to get Saula to the end.
Yeah. So speaking of Saula, at a point, you know, you're going to have to bring Nicole back into the Spit Shaker 7. Like, was there some, well, not back into it at all. Did you have a conversation with people about that? Or were you just like, I am unilaterally deciding that now you are part of an 8-person majority in what is only like slightly bigger than an 8-person tribe?
Hmm. No, that Nicole managed to get in there all on her own. Obviously, I also did what I can to speak for her, you know, tell everyone, look, Nicole's good and we can trust her. But Nicole is like me. She's good at forming relationships. She made those one-on-one connections. I really believe in that game. There's no Rob without Nicole. There's no Nicole without Rob. We played very well together. It was literally a team effort. What we did, we could have not done individually. We needed one another to do what to actually pull off what happened in that island.
This episode is also when you win your first immunity challenge. And you admit, though, at one point, hey, I don't need to necessarily win challenges yet. That's obviously going to change or going to win, you know, like the last four challenges of the season, I think. In this post-merge phase, did you throw any individual challenges or, you know, tune yourself down a bit to not necessarily come across as the big challenge guy so early on?
I wouldn't say I threw any challenges. But I didn't put as much effort as I could have if I really needed to win these things. So I remember the first challenge in an individual immunity was that endurance one where we had to stand and hold that thing. Once we hit the 2-hour mark, I realized that, look, I've proven all I need to do to myself. I don't even need this immunity thing. I know that I want Mel to go home. She's out of this game. She's out of this thing already. So I've got my target. If I hold on any longer, I'm just showing off here now, and I'm only just raising my threat level to the rest of the tribe. So I made a conscious decision to actually just leave it. I was happy. 2 hours was good. Final three. Let somebody else take it. I've got my target. Why raise your threat level anymore?
Yeah, but I mean, so you're gonna win immunity at the next one at the drowning challenge, and then, you know, gun for Jeff, who's someone you're able to vote out, obviously, with Mike on your side. And that was really, like, a contentious kind of situation for him, two main allies who were against each other. Was there ever any thought in your mind to continue to use Jeff, maybe, or there was just, like, that revenge thing and that threat thing that meant he had to go home?
No. Jeff was a very high threat because he was the glue that held Mike, Abad, Doral, and them together. So he was... I hate to use the word snake, but he was the head of a snake. And keeping him in there would have made that snake dangerous. So I had to take off the head and the body's, you know, harmless. So he was the glue that was holding that relationship together. I knew that I had to eliminate him there and then. Small factions are nothing. The moment he was able to group them together. So Jeff was definitely very dangerous. He needed to go, if not first, second.
I want to ask about your general philosophy, because you're going to point this out later on about how you really like to take care of threats almost as soon as you find out about them. And we're going to talk about this very soon with the CPAY blind side. And sometimes in Survivor, you know, a lot of it comes down to timing. And sometimes we've seen people in the past, you know, maybe make moves later on than, you know, they should think of initially just because they want to take their time. What really made you adopt that philosophy of as soon as I see someone's a problem, I need to take care of them right now?
Yeah, you don't want to give them time. Time change, you know, that game is constantly adapting so fast. That's why you can't form long-term strategies in there. You can't really lock in on a single plan and think that it's going to get you to there. You have to adapt with the game. And the moment I saw a threat, I eliminated it. And the reason I was able to eliminate these people and convince other people to join me was because I genuinely believed in what I said. When I said that T-Pay is the puppet master, I genuinely believed she was the puppet master that Nicole was talking about. So once you believe something and you truly think it's true, it's only easier to convince someone else because they can see that in your reality, you truly believe that this is the case. So the moment someone exposed themselves as a threat, I believed and saw they were a threat. And I went and I shared that information with other people and they could see that I genuinely believe what I'm saying.
Yeah, Rob, you know Nico was talking about you, right? Like you know now that you were the puppet master, right?
Only when I watch it again do I realize that, yes, he was talking about me. But at that present time, I thought, oh, no, it's C-Pay. C-Pay is the
How did you think that?
As I said, I thought everyone was playing as hard as I was.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to need to talk about the C-Pay vote because I think a lot of things converge here for you to turn against someone you've been so tight with. I mean, she was doing a lot. She came to you. She was throwing the girls under the bus. She was throwing Doral under the bus. Like, so many people that you were close with, that she was supposed to be close with as well, and you think Nico's calling her the puppet master. So, you know, what was it? What are those stages of realization for you to just realize your plans with C-Pay no longer work out in a long-term way as you had intended them to?
Yes. So the first red flag was when she approaches me with shock. I think it was at the beach at night, and she tells me that, look, this is the final three here. And we're going to go all the way to the end together. And she does tell me that, no, Jacques's got an idol, et cetera, et cetera. So initially, when I first heard that conversation, I thought that, oh, no, she's just doing this for Jacques, you know, but obviously she's still so all strong. So I obviously went along with that conversation, truly thinking that she's just, you know, sort of strengthening her bond with Jacques and trying to form a good bond between Jacques and myself to get the two of us closer as well. But then only when I realized the next day that, you know, she's approached a few people with this final three conversation. I mean, Dara told me that she also promised him final three with Jacques. And then the other one was when I went to her. So Steffi and Nicole had a little bit of issues, and I told her that, look, we need to try and fix this relationship between the two of them. They're having issues. I think it's you and I, we need to go and try and mend this relationship. And then she told me that, no, we're just going to take the both of them out. And that was the first time I realized that, wait, she's lost sight of the original family. We're family in this thing. We're going to the end together. And that was when I realized she's lost sight of that. So then I realized, okay, Sipe is gone. Now, if she turns on them, how can I be sure of my bond with her? I thought that we were family, you know? So if she can turn on them, that means she can turn on me. So now I started doubting whether is she even going to take me and Jacques to the end, or was she just tricking me now as well? So that is when everything went south with Sipe and I. But in a way, I can honestly tell you subconsciously, I think I was actually happy to take out Sipe because she was a big threat. And the longer she was put in that game for, she could have eventually even taken me out. I really do believe that she was strong enough to do that. She had the social capital. She had the relationships where if she had turned on me eventually later on in the game, she would have had the numbers. She could have taken me out.
So on that note, I mean, I can imagine this must have been one of your trickiest votes, considering that, like you said, there were people in CPay's corner. And I can imagine how tough it was to try to bring together numbers for this plan without CPay actually knowing, especially when you had, you know, Kubis and Nicole on Island of Secrets. You had the three guys away on the reward challenge. Was there a particular strategy you adopted to make sure that any strategizing you did against CPay did not come back to her?
Yeah, obviously you first go to the plan with the people you trust the most. You suss them out, you see how they feel about this. And then you also find out from them, who do you think we can bring in on this? And it's sort of like a web. You need to track this web the whole time. You not just only need to keep track of your relationship with every individual. You need to keep track of every individual's relationship with one another. So you need to know, if I tell Nicole this, this is as far as we'll go. If I tell Dante this, this is where it's going to go. You need to keep that mind map in your head the entire time. So when I looked at this thing very carefully, I saw that, okay, Michael joined me, Dural will join me, because Dural is the one who told me that, oh, I've also been promised final three. I knew that obviously Nicole and Steffi would join me. The only people I was worried about was Jacques, Corbus, and Dante. And I specifically told Mike, don't tell Dante, because mm-hmm. Dante was a leak. I told Jacques. Jacques, I knew for a fact, would have played his idol for Sipe. So that was the only risk. And thank goodness Dante didn't tell Jacques. If it were up to me, they would not never have told Dante, because Dante, Corbus, and Jacques were the only potential leaks in my mind, because I, at the same time, I know that I'm in Mike's mind and Mike is in Mabah's mind. I never bothered forming a personal one-on-one connection with Mabah because I knew I had that link via Mike. So as long as if I've got Mike, I've also technically got Mabah. So he went and told Mabah, and it just turned out perfectly. It went according to plan.
Yeah, and one of the most detailed parts of this plan is getting the half idol back from Sipe, which I think is an interesting choice. Like, I've seen things before where people just, you know, like in Survivor New Zealand, for example, there was an example where someone just voted that person out, even though it was an idol they really could have shared, just kind of took the loss of the idol so as not to alert that person to anything. And with Sipe, it's particularly interesting because she couldn't save herself with that tribal council. She only had the half idol. So you could have alerted her possibly to, you know, try and do something in that magical Sipe way if she had realized what you were doing when you were trying to get it back. So was it much of a consideration for you that you were going to go for the whole plan, get that half idol, or were you thinking maybe I should just let her leave with it and we'll be one idol down, but we'll also take out a threat?
Yeah, I definitely did approach that one very subtly. So I used her her plan of taking Nicole out eventually against her. So when I approached her, it was more of a thing that we need to get Nicole's idol off of her. And it was like, the best way to do it is that you give me your idol so I can show Nicole that, hey, look, CPA gave me the idol, so Willow's trusting me with the idols now. Can you please give me the other half? So, you know, because I could see the relationship between the two of them. They also kind of felt that it wasn't 100% anymore. So, but the person that they do trust is me, and I do have an idol anyway. So you guys might as well just trust me fully. So I actually approached it to CPA as an, okay, give me your idol so that I can show Nicole that I've got your idol. Please, can she give me that half idol? So it's like a Saula decision that, okay, let me just hold on to the idols here right now. But I also realized that I could have, at that point in the game, I could have also taken Nicole's half the idol, because I very easily could have gone to Nicole and said, hey, listen, Nicole, please give me your half of the idol so I can show it to CPA to convince her to give me her half of the idol. So technically, I could have had two idols on me at that point. And CPA would have gone home. I could have made a story saying, oh, I wasn't able to get the idol, blah. I could have really gotten two idols if I wanted to at that point. But I felt not to do that because, number one, you're risking lying to Nicole, who I haven't lied to once in the game so far. I needed to make sure that relationship was good. But on the other hand, if anything happened to me, if I was voted out with my idol, I wanted to at least know that I leave Nicole with a fighting chance. So if I hold on to two idols, if I get voted out, two idols out of the game, at least she can hold on to one and she can continue fighting without me.
Yeah, it's amazing that I think one of your best moves in the game, you know, getting the half idol, was not even to benefit yourself. You know, you put yourself in a risky position with that, but you pull it off so beautifully in order to give Nicole an idol, which is just amazing.
Yeah, I felt she deserved it. She'd been by my side from day one. We'd been through so much together. I wanted her to get to the end. If I don't get to the end, at least she can get to the end, and I could be very happy.
So you bring up later on, and we can certainly talk about, I think, your thoughts about the jury in general. You are going to say later on the season that you're not necessarily making moves with the jury in consideration. But when you send someone like Sipe, who you were so close to, in such a shocking manner, to the point of, like you just mentioned, you know, taking her half idol from her before getting rid of her, did you have any thoughts in your mind as to how you were going to send Sipe to the jury and how that might affect the way she viewed things if you made it to the end?
So up until at this point in the game, I honestly was not even thinking of the jury. My focus was completely in the game. It was staying in the game at all costs. It was sort of a thing, I'll cross that bridge when I get there. Because the moment I focus on the jury, that's the quickest way to wind up there. Energy goes away, tension flows. So if I focus on the jury, that is how I end up from the jury. When you sit at tribal council and you can speak to a number of people. You can speak to someone individually within the tribe. You can address the whole tribe, or you can go and try and impress the jury. Remember, the tribe is assessing your relationship with the jury as well. So if you have too good a relationship with the jury, like what Jacques had, then the whole tribe can see that, well, Jacques is the one person we can't go to the end with, so the whole tribe will not want Jacques to go to the end because we can see he's got a good relationship with the jury. But if you sever your relationship with the jury to a certain degree, people think that they stand a chance against you at the end. So I was not speaking for the jury. I was making it very clear that, look, I'm a bit, you could win against me at the end because I do not have good jury relationships. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword, but that's the way I chose to play. I chose to play for the tribe itself in order to stay in the tribe.
Yeah, and some of these tribe members are going to be, like, pretty blindsided by the CPA move. And as it usually comes down to, you're the one who kind of has to placate that situation. And, you know, you go and you tell basically Jacques and Kubus that there just wasn't the time to tell them. Did you feel in that moment like they were really trusting you and believing you? Or were you very wary of them? I mean, as shown by the fact that you're going to gun for them pretty soon.
Yeah, at that point, I think they could see that they were on the outs. There was really not much I could say to really get them to genuinely trust me. They could see that I didn't trust them. So that answer was just something that just came out of the top of my head.
So this episode is when you say a statement that I feel like was probably one of the best mentalities you put out there in the game when it came to getting rid of these big players early on. Nothing unites people more than when we have a common enemy, which is something you're really going to hammer home for basically your entire post-merge game. How were you able to rally people around that common enemy? Since, like you said, there are so many different types of personalities, so many different types of people can be enemies. Was there any sort of strategy you used to be like, no, this is the bad guy, we have to work to get rid of them?
Yes. So you must remember, everyone wants to feel safe. Everyone wants to feel like they're not in the bottom. So if you make it very clear, okay, this is the one who's going next, people will naturally want to go with that because at least they're safe. So nothing, and it is true, nothing unites people more than a common enemy. So I would kind of just feel like, for example, when Dante kept winning the food rewards, we were starving. And that was the thing that was kind of uniting us, that we all hungry. Dante's deliberately keeping the food away from the people who are physically able to beat him at the challenges. He was keeping us weak so that he can keep winning. And the longer we let it go on for, the bigger the difference becomes between us. Remember, Dante, even if Dante and I were both well-nourished, would still be, you know, good opposition against each other. But now he's eating almost every day, and I haven't eaten for, I think there was a point where I barely ate for about 5-6 days. So I was only getting weaker. Steffi was only getting weaker. Nicole was only getting weaker. And it was getting only harder and harder to beat him. So that's where we kind of realized that, listen, guys, Dante needs to go. Let's make him the common enemy amongst all of us. And the people who didn't even really agree with us, obviously, the likes of Mabao was eating quite often, Letitia was eating quite often, and they knew that physically they weren't going to beat him anyway. But they went on, they actually joined the majority rather than singling themselves out and joining someone who's about to go.
Yeah, and in talking to some of the people who could have been loose change players and who should have been swing votes but who sided with you, it just feels like there was never a time for majority to come against you and Saula because you had brought in all of these numbers to such a great degree. Did you have worry? Did you have fear in those swing votes? Because obviously no one's banging the anti-Rob drum, you know, as hard as Dante. And there should have been numbers there to do it, but because of the loyalty that you had kind of got from people, it was just never going to happen. Did you trust that on the island?
Yes. So I could see, I was monitoring the fraction. So there was the sort of the Mike camp with Maba and Daryl, and, you know, he also thought he had Nicole. So I could trust the information I was getting from there because I didn't only have one source. I had Daryl and I had Nicole feeding the information. So even if Daryl did decide to switch on me and not tell me Mike's plan, he couldn't do that because he knew Nicole's listening to the same information as well. So when you're having two inside men is better than having one, because if you only have one, then all your information is reliant on one person. Whereas if you're getting information from two people, you can compare it. The moment their stories don't match, you know something's wrong. Yes, someone is lying to you. But if they keep coming back to you each time with the same story, you know that that information is accurate. And then obviously I knew I had a good relationship with Steffi at that time. We were very close. She clearly was going to be loyal with me till the end. I knew I was close with Letitia as well. So I could feel that overall I have a good control over the tribe, and it wouldn't be easy for anyone to out me. I actually alluded to that at one of the tribal councils. I did say that, yes, the blind side sounds nice, but the problem is that if you decide to go and do a blind side, you are now putting yourself out. Okay. Now say, for example, there's 10 people in the tribe. You decide, okay, I'm going to blindside Rob. You need at least 5 people. In fact, you need 6 people if you want to blindside Rob. So maybe you can have 1 or 2 people that you trust. So there we go. You got 3 now. That's still not enough numbers. You need to then start going to people who you know I have a good relationship with. And now the moment you go and you say the word, let's blindside Rob, now you're risking to put yourself out next. Now you are literally, you are making yourself the next target. So that is also a big part of the reason why people didn't want to blindside me, because they would have to try and eat into my close numbers, the people that I can really trust. And they knew very well, if you just even mention my name, then you are next. And it is a bit of a ruthless tactic, but at the end of the day, that is how I had to play.
The Dante vote is going to be the first time of quite a few when you decide, all right, we really want Jacques to flush this idol, which is a little tough. You know, you're really putting out this mentality of like, hey, people who have idols, we need to get them out of the game, when obviously you and your alliance are holding on to 2 idols yourselves. How were you able to sort of balance that information where you're really villainizing Jacques for having this idol, yet at the same time, you were very clearly holding on to yours that not everyone knows about?
Yeah. So the thing, the danger about Jacques' idol was that everyone knew about it. it was something that we all knew about. Yet the people who knew that I had an idol, they thought they were one of the very few that know this information. So they thought that, okay, this is a well-kept secret. Rob's got an idol. It's not public knowledge in a way as it was with Jacques. So with Jacques' idol being public knowledge, we all sort of wanted to say, look, we need to get this thing out of play. Jacques, play this idol. As long as we have this idol, you will be a target. We wanted to get that idol out of Jacques' hands.
Yeah, and Dante goes home here. He's someone who's going to vote for you at the end. What's your relationship like when he goes home? Because you really are two battering rams, but it's, you know, it's like Nicole and Meryl we talk about. Nicole's not going to get Meryl's vote. That seemed very personal. With Dante, he said, like, he basically said he couldn't live with himself if he didn't vote for you, and there really was that respect there. Was that in the game as well, or did that kind of, you think, manifest on the jury?
Dante and I were both alpha males in that place, so naturally we were going to clash against each other. But he is a good thinker. Dante is a person that thinks, and he thinks logically. His only weakness was that Dante is a person that likes to be alone. Now, he was basically forced to be around people 24/7 for all those kind of days. So obviously it didn't bring out his best side. He would get frustrated. He's a very spiritual person as well. He likes to go within himself. So he was really at a weakness there. And that is the advantage I used over it, was that his social connections weren't that good. But really speaking, Dante and I are very much alike, more than we even realize. So we were naturally meant to go up against each other because we're both the biggest physical threats. We were the alpha males. So one of us had to go.
So this next episode is when, during the reward challenge, you're being given this choice of, okay, you can compete for food, a letter from home, or an advantage. What we've heard throughout all these deep dives is that everyone tried to go for the choice that had the least number of people they thought would go for it. Was that the reason why you went for the advantage, or did you actually want to go for it?
I wanted to go for the advantage. Something just told me, take the advantage. It'll be better off in the long run. I was starving at the time. I generally was, but I think I did not want to let the advantage fall into the wrong hands. Especially, I didn't want someone like Jacques, for example, to get that advantage. That was the key.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about how you wanted to get out Dante because he kept winning. And then in the 2 days after he goes home, you win, you know, a letter, the advantage, food, a car for a month, and immunity. So this was a good episode for you in winning everything. Was there concern now at being too threatening when you're winning, like, literally five things in 2 days? And some cheesy points, I think, as well, that episode.
True. No, at that point, I realized that Naam has just opened the taps up. This is the final stretch now. There's no point, trying to go under the radar, because at any time now people, this is where people start wanting to take out their big threats. And it was clearly obvious that I was a big threat. So I just decided to, you know, give my all now. Just go at it. Just don't hold back anymore. Start playing 100%. It's time to open up the taps. Mm.
I want to talk about your time on iOS because, I mean, you get so much stuff. You get the letter from your father. You get, you know, a nice meal. You get a chance to practice for the challenge. We saw in a secret scene this week that you had actually gotten a little too tipsy to practice the challenge. Was that true? How much time did you actually practice that challenge before it ended up happening?
So I started off with the meal and the wine, and I drank that wine. I almost finished it. I think I left maybe two glasses to drink while I watched the sunset later. But I was fairly on. And then I go and I find this thing, and I put the ball onto it, and it just dropped immediately. And I realized that I literally cannot do this right now.
So I
Yeah, it was just not possible. There was no chance. So I didn't get any time to practice whatsoever. I literally touched that thing for about all of 10 seconds, 20 seconds, and I just left it there and then. I was over it.
Yeah, and so you come back from iOS and you use iOS really offensively, something that I think you later credit as one of your best moves, maybe your best move in the game, with this fake advantage that we really didn't understand at first. It was, you have to admit, a little bit confusing, but it definitely caught some people. So how did the idea of this advantage, something that, as far as I'm aware, has never existed in the game, how did you come up creatively with that idea and then, you know, pulled it off in using it so well?
Yeah, that also I credit this to not having watched enough Survivor. If I'd seen too much Survivor, then I would have known that is not a credible advantage.
They should make it an advantage. It sounds really fun. So, like, definitely it was good.
That's your legacy now.
Yes, no, it was phenomenal. It's just an idea that came to me. I actually said this in one of my confessionals, and I was really hoping they would have shown it. My words was, I know the tribe trusts me. I know they trust me. So I know Mike trusts me. I know Daryl trusts me. But now at this stage of the game, I need them to fear me now. I need to convert their trust to fear, just to make sure that I keep them in check, to make sure that they don't get these ideas that I know are looming in their heads. So I needed to sort of convert trust into a bit of fear. And that was the best way I could do that.
Yeah. So the advantage. Explain the advantage. What is the mechanisms of how this works? So when in your mind would a producer have told you people's votes?
So I thought that you could, in my mind, I imagined it. Everyone goes up and everyone votes. And then just before Nico does that announcement of who wants to play the tribal council, I can get up and say, look, I'm playing my advantage. I would like to know what Mike and Maba voted for, for example. And then Nico would tell me, okay, Mike voted for this person, Maba voted for that person. And then thereafter, I have an opportunity now to play my idol. So that coupled with an idol would have been an amazing advantage. And that's what scared Mike off.
I love it. This should be an advantage. So, this is the Syrian werewolf. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a really crazy advantage. And what's so surprising to me is that you had some big super fans on your tribe. I don't know, maybe if you kept Marilyn, Rob, she would have doubted you much more than someone like Mike did.
Most definitely. Marilyn had watched enough Survivor. But then again, it's also this. Remember, I had not liked Mike at this point in the game. I'd invested a lot of time and effort into him. I slowly let him earn that trust and given him that trust. So he trusted me enough to believe it, because at that point, I've never lied to him. Whereas if I had lied to him in the past, he would have not believed that. He would have said, oh, okay, Rob's lied to me before. I'm not going to believe this. But at that point in time, I'd never lied to him, which is why he believed it.
Mm. And, you know, the Corbis vote is going to happen. I still don't understand, Rob. I need someone to explain to me. Before I get done with the deep dive, I'm going to find out. And my next deep dive for people who weren't in the game.
Nicole had no idea
what happened.
Why Steffi ended up changing her vote.
But
I don't
not just
know
Steffi.
You do either.
Who was the second person? How did this happen? Who changed their votes? Why?
Okay. So I know Steffi changed hers in Tribal Council because she realized that she is the person that they're going for. So mm-hmm. she sort of just wanted to pile them on just to ensure that, okay, Corbis goes. Because remember, if we have too many votes on Jacques, mm-hmm. and Jacques plays an idol, then she, and if there's too little votes on Corbis, then potentially she goes home. So she just didn't want to take that chance. She wanted to make sure that, look, because we're almost 100% sure that Jacques is going to play his idol. So she just wanted to make sure that there's more votes on Corbis than there are on Jacques, than there are on herself. And then at that point in time, I remember Nicole and I said I was going to vote for Jacques. And then Nicole was supposed to vote for Jacques as well. Look, to be honest with you, that vote, I'm not even 100% sure. I don't know.
No one knows.
Right, you know, here's the thing. We will give a massage to the one Survivor South Africa castaway who can tell us what happened in that vote.
Yeah, that was a big stuff. But I do remember somewhere along the line, Nicole and I switched our votes, and I said I'll vote for this person, she'll vote for that person. But yeah, we made a big stuff up there. It wasn't just Steffi. It definitely wasn't Steffi alone.
We'll never know. But yeah, at some point, the lines got crossed. Corbis goes home. And then you're going to come back from Tribal Council now, and, you know, Jacques has not played his idol, which must have been frustrating. You know, as someone who you've been trying to flush his idol for a couple of Tribal Councils, buttoned up his shirt, and, you know, get back to the beach, and this is when the whole, like, Mother Jacques incident happened. So, you know, I'd love to get your perspective on, like, your part in this at the time, and then also, you know, in reflection of that.
Yeah. So when it happened, obviously, initially we get back to the beach and I literally shake this man's hand. Congratulations. You know, it was an incredible move. And then suddenly he just switches up on us. He completely changes the energy around there and he makes it very clear that he's coming for the biggest Mother Jacques there is. And so it kind of felt like he was spitting in our faces. You know, we just say congratulations, well done. And then you go and you now say, it felt like he was trying to strong arm the tribe. And remember, I told you, if you strong arm the tribe, you risk breaking and losing them. And that's exactly what happened. And I did get angry for a second. That's when I threw down the coconut. But that is in the scene. It wasn't like I started throwing around coconuts for the next hour or so. No, the coconut thing, I had a coconut in my hand and I threw it on the floor. And I said, I just congratulated you for what you did. And you go and you do this to me. You make it very clear that you want to take me out, me or Steffi. I kind of knew he was after either one of us. And I went from there straight to go sleep. no one said to Jacques, he's not allowed to sleep at the shelter. He chose to go sleep in the hammock himself. Obviously, Steffi was very vocal about how upset she was. But at the same time now, when this happened, I kind of realized that, wait, we need to protect ourselves. He's just made it very clear that he just wants someone to come join him and they're going to trick this whole tribe. So the only way to protect all of us, it was also very, it was strategical to me. I was not emotional about it. In fact, I can say that the edit obviously overplayed this thing to make it more sensational. They wanted to get to make this thing big. It obviously got people talking more about Survivor. But Jock knows this very well himself, that I sat him down. We were sitting in the exact same position that I was sitting with Mike when I told Mike, thanks for never lying to me. We're sitting on the same bench. And I said to Jock, Jock, we're not going to isolate you. I'm not isolating you from the tribe. When we're sitting together as a group, please come sit down. We chat, we laugh, we sing. We were good. We were really in a good place. It was just the thing of no one is allowed to take one-on-one walks with Jacques. And again, if someone does take a one-on-one walk with Jacques, it's not Jacques that we're going to be angry at. It's going to be that person, because it clearly means that you've taken Jacques' offer and you're turning on the whole tribe. So he really was not isolated in the way that it looks like in the edit. The only time we actually sent him away was when he saw we were talking strategy. It was just before Tribal Council. We needed to talk strategy. He knew, in fact, what we were talking about when he approached us, which is why he asked, can I come sit there? And he was like, we're still talking strategy. But any other time when we weren't talking strategy, he was very much a part of the tribe. In fact, I can even tell you, and anyone else in the game can even tell you, that he even told the jury members that, listen, guys, he described it as there was three aspects of the game. There's the time, the downtime at camp. There's the challenges time, and then there's the strategy time. He said, I still chill with the tribe during the downtime. At the challenges, all is good. It's only when we talk strategy that I've been isolated from the tribe. That was a strategical move on my side. It did. I do think it went a little far, especially when I rewatched it again. It was definitely not my proudest moment, but it was strategy. It was definitely a strategical move on my side. And funny enough, my relationship with Jacques was very good coming out of the game. You know, we traveled back together. Everything was really good. It was only when he watched that thing again, suddenly, I don't know if he embodied this whole bullying thing that had gone on. But he seems like he really now believes that he was being bullied there and he was completely ostracized. It's as if he forgot the conversation that we had together when I said, look, Jacques, I don't think it's right to completely isolate you from the tribe. It is not right. You're not supposed to be alone here. Let's chill, still chill, hang out. We were in a good position. We actually had a good relationship, at least from my side. I believe we had a good relationship.
So I also know that, you know, like you said, you instituted this idea of like, okay, nobody talked to Jacques one-on-one. I'd heard some rumblings that you might have done that. Did you have, and besides that talk you just mentioned, did you have any sort of one-on-one conversations with Jacques while nobody else was, talking with him?
Yes, I did. So I think it was the night where he went home. I was trying to find out if he has an idol or not. So I did have a one-on-one conversation with him, but the tribe at that time knew why I was doing it, because he did even bring it up to Tribal Council. He said, hey, guys, no one is allowed to have one-on-one chats with me except for Rob. So he told the entire tribe that I had a one-on-one conversation with him, and I did not deny it because the tribe knew what I was trying to do at that time, at that point in time. It made no sense for me to sign with Jacques.
Yeah, and I mean, at this tribal council where Jacques is going to play his idol early is when you kind of have to, obviously, you're cutting Maba, you're thinking about cutting Mike. Mike's also coming for you, which you're prohibiting with the advantage. So that relationship with Mike, was it a shock to you that he was coming for you at that point, or did you kind of expect it around that time?
Mike did make a move on me a bit earlier than I expected. So I found out about Mike's potential blindside within an hour or so of me coming back from the Island of Secrets. So when I came back from the Island of Secrets and I told them about this advantage, they went off, Mike and Daryl, and then it didn't even take an hour for Daryl to come back to me and say, okay, look, Rob, this is what's going on here. And I realized that, okay, it worked. I planted a bit of fear in there and now the truth comes out. So I'd already known about Mike's blindside for quite a while, actually. It happened a bit sooner than I expected, but information is power in that game. So I'd already got the information I needed.
So during this, all this stuff as well, you really want to hammer home that Darrow is the one person that he can trust. You say, here's my idol. You can hold on to it. He gives it back to you. When you gave it to him, what percent chance did you think that he would give it back to you in that moment?
I was 100% sure he'd give it back to me because he had seen how much of a problem a public idol is. So if he had not given it back to me, I would have made sure that he's next on the chopping block. I would have. It's a lot of weight to hold on to an idol. No one wants that kind of target on themselves. So if he had not given it back to me, I think it would have been very dangerous, because he would have shown that, okay, Rob, everything we've talked about going in together is not the case, because I'm now taking your idol and I'm going to use it against you. So that would have automatically made him public enemy number one for me. It would have put his threat level at the top. So I knew he was going to give it back.
Yeah, so this was it was a test. It wasn't even just a sign of trust. You were using it as a way to see exactly how he would respond.
I was actually, I did it. I wanted to make sure that in his mind, he can see that I trust him. So I did want to try and further fortify that trust. I wanted him to see that, hey, look, Rob, trust me enough. He's giving this idol. But in the back of my mind, I knew very well that he's going to give it back. I did not doubt that for a second.
Yeah, speaking of, like, extreme trust, like, Mike has been someone who's turning against you, but you do go to a tribal council where someone plays their idol and throws out your name, which is what Jacques was doing, and then two people still vote for Jacques. Like, were you surprised to see that, or did you understand their perspective?
I understand why they did, because remember, at the end of the day, they still need to carry on this game after that tribal council. So if they had deviated from the plan and gone and wrote, done something else, then they would have already pretty much said that, okay, look, Rob, this is all the excuse you need for coming at us. So they were trying to protect their game going forward and just sticking with the plan. But I was surprised myself that they actually wrote down Jacques' name. It was shocking. It really was shocking. I didn't expect that.
So at this tribal council, none of you know this, even Mike, but Mamba ends up finding an idol at the voting booth and ends up not playing it. We did a lot of speculation. You know, I think people said, like, oh, Mamba blew it, because then they could have, you know, Jacques vote against Rob would have counted. Putting yourself in that mindset at the time, if Mamba got up and played her idol, would you have played yours, or would you have thought that, you know, there would have been votes against Letitia and you would have been safe?
No. I knew, because Jacques made it very clear that he's going to write my name down. And every single tribal council, except for the Corvus tribal council, I knew exactly what the vote structure looked like, each and every vote, every single time. I remember every one of my confessionals, I told the cameras exactly who's going to vote for who. So I knew what the votes looked like. And I knew that if we had piled so many votes on Mabah, that if Mabah played an idol, there was a very high chance of me going home. So I was not going to risk it. I was going to play my idol. But I'm glad I didn't have to, because I would have lost the biggest shield I had. Remember, a lot of people didn't come for me because they knew I had an idol. So it was very dangerous. So that idol was more of a shield than anything else.
And so all the votes would have been nullified in that instance. You would all had to re-vote. We surmise that I was going to say, you definitely would have gone after Mike in that instance.
Yes, without a doubt, he would have been gone.
Yeah, because you're going to, you know, get to this next vote and Jacques is like public enemy number one, but you've now kind of started feeding false information to Mike and to Rao, it seems. I mean, I don't know how transparent that was or, you know, with the edit, but it really does seem like you're talking to Mike and to Rao about eventually coming together with them against a Steffi plan when you'd been quite honest with them before. So was that like a very purposeful change in your relationship, especially with someone like Rao?
I needed Mike and Rao to believe that I was going to go to the end with them. And I could see that they didn't really have a good relationship with Steffi. They kind of wanted Steffi out. So if you can't beat them, join them. So I kind of made them feel that, okay, I'm joining them in on this. And Steffi, this is where Steffi first raised the red flag for me, because I realized that she's even lying to me here now. So the whole tribe didn't believe this. And I even went back to her to say, look, Steffi, is that really what happened? And she said, yeah, that really is what happened. So that was the first red flag. If someone starts lying to you in the game, even if it's about a small thing, that is already starting to raise red flags in your mind. And that was Steffi's first mistake. That's when she started raising her threat level slowly in my eyes. But remember, I'm so fixated on her. I'm so focused on this end goal, because I've had it in my mind from day one that I'm going to the end with Saula. That even after that happened, even after I saw she lied to me, I still excused it in my mind. And I said, you know what? It's fine. I just want to go to the end with Saula. I still don't care. I don't care. I want to go to the end with Saula. That I was just too stuck on that long-term plan. And that's also why I say you shouldn't have long-term plans that are too solid, because the game is adapting. And there was a red flag here, because I realized that she had lied to me for the first time.
What you did in this episode, right from the end of the Mamba vote, that I thought was just so intriguing but ended up paying off so well for you is, you know, you talk to Mike. Obviously, he just lost his closest ally, and you purposely put the blame for it on yourself and Steffi because you wanted Nicole and Darrow to still Mike to trust them still so they could be your moles and they could give away information. Why did you decide in that moment to put the blame on yourself, knowing that, yes, you still have an idol, but, you know, in an individual game, you were taking the blame off of other people and purposely possibly making somebody mad at you directly?
Yeah, so I didn't want to blow or burn Darrow Nicole's cover. At this stage, I already know that Mike wants to come for me anyway, and I already know that he hasn't got a good relationship with Steffi. So us taking the rap for it, especially also how the vote structures were set up, is that in a way we could have done what I said we did. So it was believable to Mike. It was a good excuse. And I needed to make sure that I keep that good relationship between him and Darrow and Nicole. And I wanted Mike to go to Jacques. That was very important to me because I needed to get into Mike. I needed to get into Jacques' head. And the only way to do that was for him to work with Mike and then Mike to tell the information to Darrow and Nicole. Eventually it comes to me. I had no direct link to Jacques. The only way I could access Jacques' mind was through Mike. So I needed these people to start working together.
Yeah, in all of this, like, you're really swindling Darrow, Mike, quite a few people. Did you ever feel like you weren't being bought in that moment, or did you kind of know that you were taking people hook, line, and sinker?
I could see that they were believing everything. And I honestly put them in a bit of a position where Darrow, for example, I think there was times where he wanted to turn on me, but he realized it's not going to be easy because Nicole is also getting fed the same information. Mm. So I didn't give them much of an option to actually turn on me because as long as I have Nicole there and I can trust Nicole, then I'm fine. Nicole and I's relationship was really the key that, because if you just have one person, you know, word is always true. That is gold in that game. That is very powerful to have that one person you can rely on. So I think, yeah, Nicole was the key for me in that game, honestly.
So in this episode, we also see a really interesting thing where I think we had all assumed that because, you know, Darrow was so in tight with you, you would want to take him to the end. But this is where you solidify a final four alliance with you, Steffi, Nicole, and Letitia. What made you decide to basically, you know, replace Letitia with Darrow with Letitia in your optimal endgame scenario?
Yeah. So obviously at this point, I definitely have a better relationship with Darrow. I want to go to the end with him as far as I can, but I realized that in a final four challenge, put myself, Steffi, Nicole, and Darrow there. Darrow stood a better chance of winning than Nicole than Letitia did. So to me, in my eyes, Letitia was the perfect person to take to the final four because we could at least be sure that she would not win. It would definitely have to be either myself, Steffi, or Nicole that would take it. That way we can ensure that we don't have to turn on each other. Whereas if someone like Darrow had won or Letitia had won, then we would then have to turn on each other. So to me, it was only because she was less of a threat than Darrow was. That's why I was comfortable to go with the final four with Letitia.
Yeah, so Jacques is going to go home, and then we get to the family reward / immunity challenge, which, you know, you win with your mom, which is amazing. And you have to, you know, make this choice to send Nicole to Island of Secrets with Darrow.
Wait, Shannon, was that his mom? I'm pretty sure that was his sister, right?
I mean, she's a vampire, that woman.
Yeah, I really love the scene where you're like...
You got the letter from your dad, he probably looks like a 7-year-old or something. There's something in your blood.
Yeah, I don't like when you handwriting shamed your dad, because your dad did not have bad handwriting. So, especially for a 7-year-old.
Have you seen my handwriting now, like, very just perfect it is, then you realize I'm very picky with handwriting.
I would expect nothing less. But yeah, you're going to, you know, win this family reward, send Nicole to the Island of Secrets, which she understood, I think, theoretically, but was obviously very emotionally affected by it. Any regrets there, or do you feel like, you know you made the right call?
I definitely know I made the right call. At this point in time, Nicole's the person I trust more than anyone. So it would be a waste for us to be at the same place at the same time. I needed Nicole to keep an eye on Darrow or Mike, and Darrow and Mike, and while I keep an eye on Steffi and Letitia. I would have expected that if she were to win, she would have gone with her two and put me on the opposite end. To me, there was no other way. if you can, we trusted each other. We know that the only word we can rely on in this game is each other's word. So for us to be in the same place together made no sense to me.
So while we totally agree with the choices, I want to talk about your reasoning for it, at least what you told to the rest of the tribe. So obviously there's going to be the Letitia, we don't know how much time she has left. Steffi, you decide to say like she needs some nourishment, which people will point out later on, like there are people who did not immediately go to Island of Secrets and, you know, have a little bit of a meal with Maba. So we know obviously why you chose the people that you did, but why did you choose that specific reasoning? And did you get any pushback from the people that were still in the game about the reasoning behind those people?
So my reason for choosing Letitia was, number one, I actually did promise her that, look, if I do win a family visit, I'm going to go with you. And so that, I remember I had to think of something, some sort of reason. You don't want to give the real reason as to why you're picking these people, why you're setting up this way. So you have to come up with some sort of excuse that at least sounds credible. So I used the time excuse with Letitia. And then with Steffi, remember the day before that, all of us got food except for Mike. All of us got food at that auction, if you want to call it an auction. Steffi took one for the team. She wanted to keep that advantage away from Jacques. So she took that advantage from Jacques. And then she came back to me the next morning and she told me, Rob, I'm starving. I'm so hungry. I don't know. My mind is not even working properly. So I wanted to try and feed her. I knew I needed, you know, technically she hasn't eaten. We, all of us ate yesterday and Nicole ate like crazy. She was eating all of our food. I got a cake, I got biltong. You know, so we were all fairly okay nourished, except for Mike, obviously. So I used the nourishment excuse to take Steffi along with, only because at this point I realized that I also can't really trust Steffi.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about how you knew that Steffi had seen Gina on the Island of Secrets. Was it something, because we talked about it, but like, would the loved ones have known? Did your mom / sister kind of verify that? I love, by the way, your strategy session with your mom / sister on the beach where you're like explaining Survivor to her. So did she have a part in that, or was it really just like your power of perception?
Yes, so the first red flag obviously was when they initially saw each other. But the real, what actually cemented that idea in my mind was when we went back to camp. So now, okay, I do understand that she wanted her husband there more than he, but he couldn't make it. Fair enough. But the least she would be doing is try to pull as much information as she can from Gina. She would have been asking lots of questions. What's happening back home? How's my husband? What's, you know, like myself and Letitia were generally trying to absorb as much information as we can from our loved ones. And she wasn't doing that. These people were sitting next to each other, not really even talking at times. And that was when I was sure in my mind, when I saw that happening, I realized these people have seen each other. That is why they're not talking. Yeah.
I still feel like that's weird. Like, she'd seen Gina for one day, but surely there was, like, more to catch up on. But I guess not.
Yeah, I could see that they were up to date. They were not that deep into their conversation, you know? So I realized, no, they've seen each other.
Had your mom known that Gina had been on Island of Secrets? Like, did you find out later on that she'd known that? Or did they keep that secret?
Yeah, she was aware, but we didn't have time to speak. They made sure that we're not alone, you know, where they could actually divulge that. So she wasn't even able to tell me. And she was also told not to reveal something like that in the game. So oh, wow. She didn't tell me. And my mom also, at this point, she doesn't know Survivor. I actually showed her what an immunity idol is, what it does. Mm-hmm. I showed her what individual immunity is and what it does. I actually pretty much explained the game to her on the island. She's basically never seen it before.
So, speaking of things that do get revealed, though, Letitia decides to tell you that she found this idol, which came as a shock to you. What was your reaction to it? And did it at all shake your ideal plan of going to the final four with her?
Yes, I think the wine helped a lot. I'm really glad that it got a good amount of wine inside. It obviously is good.
at least you played the challenge before you had the wine this time.
Yeah, the wine saved me that day, because now I realize that, okay, well, she's in position of an idol. Automatically, that raises the threat level. At least I know what's in the game now. I can make better decisions going forward. And it obviously made it more, it solidified that idea of, okay, take Letitia to the final four. She's in position of an idol right now. There's no point going for her. So let's take Dural out.
Yeah, so, you know, you get to this tribal council. Where, you know, you have to speak to Nicole, you haven't had the chance to speak, and you're separated by the entire tribal council set on opposite sides. What are you trying to achieve in really getting that information out of her quite publicly?
So I needed to make sure that there aren't any advantages that Mike or Darrell could have potentially gotten from the Island of Secrets. And I tried, she was sitting so far away from me, I couldn't do it discreetly. And at this point in the game now, I was trying to say to like, Nicole, is there anything I need to worry about? Like, because I'm about to do something really risky. I know that you don't tell people you're taking them out before you do. But in this particular tribal council, I need to make sure the tribe knows that we are going for Mike. And she obviously perceived it the wrong way. She thought I was actually doubting her, et cetera, which is why she lashed out a little bit. But at the end, when she realized why I asked her, why I had to ask like that, because I was about to do a very dangerous move in Survivor. I was about to pretty much tell Mike, this is why you're going home, and you are going home tonight. And for me, it was very important because at this stage of the game now is the first time where I'm starting to realize that I need to influence the jury. Every person I take out goes to the jury and they're planting new seeds. So while I have Mike here, I need to plant the right seeds in his mind. I need to make him see that, listen, Mike, we are close, and I love you as a brother, but you came for me first. So this was finally my opportunity to start influencing the jury. So the way I sent him off was a very important way to sort of show to him that, look, Mike, you came for me, and that is why you're going home. So when he does go to the jury now, he won't have any resentment towards me. In fact, he might even start advocating for me, which is what he did. And I'm glad I sent him off the way I did.
Well, another part of that tribal council was you told Nico that you had been building your circle of trust since day one, which leads to the eventual outing of the Amigos and the final three deal you have at that time. Yeah. Did that come out completely accidentally, or was that another part of your strategy to, you know, make sure that Mike left with certain pieces of information?
At this point, I was like over it. I was really over lying and stuff. I realized that Saula is in a good enough position that we've got enough strength in here that there's no point in lying anymore. Darrell's on his own. Once Mike goes, Darrell's on his own. And, you know, Letitia, we can beat at the final four. I really still was hoping that I knew Steffi was up to something. Look, don't get me wrong. I knew Steffi was up to something, but I didn't know to what degree. I didn't know how serious it really was that she was actually now actively trying to get me out of the game. So I did have a bit of a red flag on Steffi, but I didn't pick up that it was as bad as it really was. So I kind of was over lying. I was like, you know what, let me just make it clear here that I'm sticking with my original lines. Let the jury see that this is why I did what I did. It wasn't personal. I was just getting my family to the end. That is why I did everything I did. So I wanted to come out at this point.
Yeah. And then, you know, in doing that, you watch Mike come to these realizations and then like try and drag Darrell to similar conclusions with a bit of difficulty. Like, what was it like just watching the spectacle of that like combined semi-realization between the two of them?
It was hard not to laugh, honestly. Like, to laugh at Tribal Council because it was really a funny moment. Even when you watch it, I think we all had a good laugh at how they're just putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And Darrell was still like, you know, so confused. That's why Letitia calls him confusion. It was a Tribal Council. At the end of the day, we need to give you guys a good show. I think that Tribal Council was a brilliant show. It was a very good entertainment, and I was glad I was able to provide it.
So the next episode is, you know, the final five. And you say that, you know, for the first time in the game, you really feel uneasy and that something can go wrong. Was there anything that was tipping you off to that? Or was it just a matter of, OK, we're so close to the end that there's a chance something could happen?
Yeah, it at this point in the game, I always had someone that I knew was up against me. I always knew what the threat was. And I always knew who it was. But now for the first time in the game, I didn't know. And you must know that if you don't know who's coming for you, or you if you don't know something, that's a really red flag on its own, because there always is someone coming for you. But for the first time now, I didn't know. In my mind, there was no one coming for me for the first time in this game. Mike is gone. There's no more threats left. But that on its own was making me a bit nervous. Like, okay, wait now, Rob. If there's no trick coming up here, maybe the trick is on you. So I would have never not played my idol. When Nicole suggested it, in typical Survivor fashion, you don't shut down someone's idea right then in front of them. You at least need to make it look like you're giving it some thought. You're taking their thing into consideration. That is what makes people continue working with you, because you're showing that, hey, I acknowledge your idea and I'm going to give it some thought. You're sort of giving back. So that's why I didn't shut down Nicole's idea initially. But then when I won the immunity necklace, I realized, okay, fine. If you guys want to do this, go for it.
You guys can do that. That's your funeral. The important questions we need to ask on the podcast. That island, was it terrible? We need to, the bats. Surely it's the gross and terrible reward.
Not at all. It was actually a fantastic island. Very beautiful. The bats didn't come that close to us at all. And initially we were supposed to go in to go see the bats. But it was actually so close to the time where the bats were going to leave the island anyway that they actually woke the bats up, you know, a little earlier. And the bats did their natural thing. So I think they only woke them up maybe half an hour before they were supposed to leave anyway. But we got a beautiful shot. It's a lovely island. I'm glad I went there. We got great food. Fantastic place. It was actually a bucket list moment. You know, the kind of moment you'll remember for the rest of your life.
In your nightmare.
Something like that.
I think Shannon would remember it for a very different reason. Well, it's one person that you deprive of the Bat Island experience is Letitia, who you decide to send to Island of Secrets. And it's going to turn out that she's going to get this final advantage that maybe in a different world, we were very scared, could have led to you going out at the final four. Why did you decide to choose her, knowing what might be there at the Island of Secrets for her?
Firstly, number one, I had to start, you know, working on my relationship with Nicole, sort of mend it, nurture it, and give it some TLC, because I did see that, you know, what I did the previous day with her not going on that reward hurt her. So there was really no question. I had to take Nicole with me there. And then choosing who to go to the Island of Secrets, I knew there could be advantage there, but I kind of... At this point, I was worried about Steffi. I was worried about Daryl, because especially when Daryl knew he was going home that night, or, you know, he was going home next. So I kind of saw that Letitia would be the least threatening person. You know, if she gets an advantage in a game, for example, it's easier for us to overcome that advantage if Letitia has it than if Steffi has it, for example, because Steffi is physically, you know, much more of a challenge. Give Steffi an advantage, you almost guarantee that she'll win that game. Give Letitia an advantage, we still could stand a chance of winning against her. That's the way I saw.
You were thinking it would be like a immunity challenge advantage at that late stage of the game?
No, it might just give a little bit of advantage in the game. That's what I was thinking would come up.
Okay, so at this stage, we also see you have a confessional where you say you want Nicole to win the game. And we were like, no, what? You need to win the game. So was there honesty in that, or was it taken out of context?
When I came into this game, the whole of Saula will tell you that I told them that I want to, the true value in this game is not the million. It's the legacy you create in the game. And I wanted to prove a universal law, which I believe what you give, you get back multiplied. Given, you shall receive. I wanted to put my money where my mouth is. I wanted to actually, I told the entire tribe that if I get to the end and I'm sitting next to someone that I believe deserves to win this game, that has gone to the end with me, I will tell the jury, vote for this person. And that way, you proving that you believe this so much, given you shall receive. You believe in those words so much, you're actually putting it into practice right now. So at that stage in the game, I sort of saw that, you know, Nicole's never betrayed me. She's been there with me day one. We've gone through so much together. The trust is so strong. She is the person that I want to go to the end with. And she's the person that I want to prove that universal law with. I want to say to the tribe, listen, I'm going to give because I know that when you give, you receive. So at that point, if Jimmy was honest, Nicole to me was the perfect person that I could have gone to the end with and said, guys, give it to her. So at that point of the game, I did want her to win.
I'm sure what complicates it is what happens next, where you win immunity and Nicole approaches you and says, hey, FYI, Steffi was planning to blindside you had you not won immunity, and you are absolutely floored. It's going to motivate you to take out Steffi in that moment. But before we get there, what was going through your head when you find out that, you know, not only was Steffi planning to do this, but that she had Letitia and Nicole for a bit on her side to do so?
Yes. That was now the second moment in the entire game where I started asking, is this thing rehearsed? Am I here with a bunch of actors and I'm the only one that's actually really, like, is they prank on me right now? So I'm playing it. That was also the second time in the entire game where my head, I was completely shocked and I was spinning. It was hard for me to digest. It took me a while. And then I quickly realized that, okay, Nicole was in on this as well. And I realized that I think she only came back to me because she realized that if she's the first to report it, I'll take her side and move the other. So she kind of realized she bet on the wrong horse. And she came back to me. But then this also meant that now, okay, wow, Nicole, we're about to finish this game having never lied to one another. We're about to finish this game coming out, you know, proving what we said we would prove, that, you know, trust, loyalty, all those sort of things. We were going to pull it off, but now you just went along and you try to take me out. So it obviously hurts our relationship at the same time. But in my mind, I now realize that, okay, fine. She at least came and she told me what was happening, which is better than the other two. Steffi and Letitia were still dead set on getting me out of that game. At least she changed. She had a change of heart. And it's also at that moment that I kind of started realizing, hey, you know what? Nicole has a terrible relationship with the jury. Let me actually take her to the end. Yeah. So I was hurt, surprised. But then that also switched on. That side of me, you know, that very strategic side of me, that it switched on again. It was off for a bit, but that literally gave me enough of a fright to switch back on that Michael Schofield vibe.
Yeah, because this tribal council is crazy, so entertaining, like all the Icarus stuff, and then so many parts to it, like you know, playing your idol for Nicole, who plays it for Doral, like instead of you just, you know, playing it for Doral. So what was all the thinking behind each strategic component of that tribal council?
So the first one was, I decided, look, we don't want to give them a red flag. Let them not know about it. Let's go along as if everything is going to happen, play out the way it plays out. And obviously there was a bit of theatrics to it as well. But I kind of wanted to make sure that Nicole doesn't turn on me again. So she needs me to play my idol for her, just to make sure she doesn't go back on me again. So she plays her idol for Doral, then I'll play my idol for her. That way she needs me. That way she can't turn on me again. She's relying on my idol to be safe. So that was sort of a way to ensure that I forcefully keep Nicole's loyalty. That's why I wanted to play out the way it did.
And so, you know, there is, to Shannon's point, a lot of dramatics going on. If you said you were making a big television moment for us in the last Tribal Council, this blows it out of the water to the point where you're about to crown Steffi with the immunity necklace, and then you make a big pause there. I mean, when you talk about sending people to the jury, as fun as it was, did you worry in that moment, and especially following it up with, like, you turning to her and saying, like, you tried to blindside me, did you worry about the way you were sending her to the jury specifically?
At this stage, I knew that she came at me first, so I didn't expect her to carry the amount of resentment she did towards me. Like, she at the final tribal council, she kind of says to me, "Hey Rob, I was blindsiding you, but your job was supposed to come to me and say, 'Hey Rob, hey Steffi, I hear you blindsiding me.' You know, that's not how the game works." She took a shot at me. I dodged that bullet, and only naturally I had to take her out. So I thought that she would be more angry at Nicole, who betrayed her, than she would be at me, who was just defending myself.
Yeah, which would be fair. I mean, her final tribal council speech was very much like someone who got cheated on saying, like, "Hey, how come you're breaking up with me? Like, don't you want to talk it out?" And like, well, no, because you cheated on me. So no. You know, you get to the final four with Nicole, who you've had some trust issues with, Doral, who's like now back in the fold, but was out of the fold. You do win immunity, but do you have a sense of what would have happened if you lost? Do you still think it would have been Letitia going home, or did you feel you were vulnerable there?
If I'd lost that one, they would have taken me out. It would have been the wise thing to do. It would have been naturally what they would have been. I wouldn't have even blamed them at that point. It was fairly obvious that I stand the highest chance of winning this game. So I knew, and I actually said in one of my confessionals, that for the first time in this game, I have no alliances to hide behind. For the first time in this game, I truly am alone. For the very first time in this game. Because if I had lost that thing, I have a strong, strong feeling that they would have turned on me, and it would have been wise of them to. I wouldn't have even blamed them.
So if you had gone to the jury then, and let's discount what might have happened in Final Tribal Council, if it was Nicole versus Letitia versus Doral, I know that jury would have probably rather voted for Nico than voted for any of them, but who would you have voted for?
Nicole. I did say as well, like, you know, Nicole and I went through a lot. For about 36, 37 days, she was 100% loyal to me. So just because she had a day or two of you know, that whole betrayal in her, it doesn't take away from what we created before that. I think we formed an incredible bond in that game, and I would have been able to say, no, she deserves to win. She played very well. She did definitely, and I still say now, she played a fantastic game. She deserves every single vote she got.
Yeah, I mean, she did get 4 votes. I don't know how Letitia would have done necessarily. I'm interested to get more insight into that with some of the other jurors I'm going to speak to in the future. But, you know, Letitia does come to you, I don't think, with the right argument, basically just being like, take out Nicole because everyone hates her. Maybe the argument should have been take out Nicole because she might get votes because her game was impressive. Was there any consideration for you to take out someone who wasn't Letitia there?
No, Letitia would have had a beautiful story at the end because she was, you know, chosen as the weakest first in the game. She's the oldest and she wanted to give up a number of times, but she stayed in and she fought. And believe me, the circumstances we were living in, it was tough for us in our young youth, in our age, for her to also endure all that cold, all that hunger. It's phenomenal. Letitia's an incredibly strong woman. And I think that she could have possibly even beaten me at the end. There was definitely a higher probability of Letitia winning, in my mind, than Nicole winning against me. So there was no doubt Letitia had to go because she would have had a beautiful story to say at the end.
There is a moment, though, when, you know, Letitia is talking with Nicole, they're hashing things out a bit, and Nicole says that, you know, this is Survivor, you know, I sort of had to leave my morals at the door a bit. And you admitted in a confessional that you were sort of tired of Nicole's quote-unquote motivational speeches, but something changed in your mind when you heard her talk about, you know, how she was able to get into the game and declare this is Survivor. Did your opinions on her really change near the end of the game when she was starting to become, starting to cement her final tribal council argument and talk a little bit less about the integrity and moral of it all?
Mm. Yeah. The way she sort of snapped back at Letitia is like, this is Survivor. Like, this is what I expected to do. That's a side of Nicole member I have not seen at this point. She's always, especially with me, and she's only shown a side of me of, you know, integrity, loyalty, et cetera, et cetera. And her reply to Letitia at that point was just like, no, but it's fine to backstab and you can play the game that way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I started seeing a different side to her. But I realized that this is what I need. And actually, the fight that they had there at camp, I wanted that same thing to repeat itself at tribal council in front of the jury. Remember, I wanted that thing to relive because what I saw there was perfect. I realized that this conversation needs to be repeated at tribal council, which is why when we walked into tribal council, I sort of wanted them to have a go at each other. I needed a repeat of that.
Yeah. How confident were you walking into final tribal council that you could get the win?
Again, in my mind, there was no other option. I've been, you know, something I've been telling anyone every single day. I woke up in the morning, I'd keep my eyes closed, and I would say, I am the winner of Survivor. I am the winner. I whispered in my head every single day, every single night. I said it thousands and thousands of times before Survivor, during Survivor. I kept saying, I am the winner of Survivor. I kept speaking that into existence every second of every day. I had that downtime to think. I would repeat that same mantra.
So let's get into this final tribal council a bit, because we got into this during our finale podcast that even though you do earn 6 votes, deservedly so, I would say, there were some interesting answers that you gave to some of these jurors. I want to start with Sipe, because you need to address her blind side. This is when you talk about, you know, you went against the family. If something's broken, you fix it. You don't throw it away. And Sipe points out that, you know, you're saying all this stuff, but also one of the quote unquote members of the family is sitting right there on the jury. What made you come up with that response for her? And did you have a feeling after that response that she would have voted for you or Nicole?
I can admit that at that final tribal council, I was so exhausted. I was mentally drained, physically drained. I was very much over the game at this point. I had kind of almost given up just before the finish line because I was that, like, just over it. Like, okay, you know what, Rob, you've gotten this far. You've proved yourself. At this point of the game, it's in their hands now. Let them do what they do. Let them be like, just, I surrendered. Like, okay, whatever happens, happens. Let me just go in there and say what I need to say. So that's why you see I wasn't really fighting that hard in that tribal council as hard as I should have. Mm. The fresh Rob in my mind, the way I had it was now, I would have, you know, brought up a lot of things that I did in the game. And because my mind is sharp now, I'm not hungry, I'm not tired, I'm strong. But that was a very weak, broken person that you saw walk into tribal council. That was technically over it. I just wanted to get home at that point and go sleep and eat. Mm-hmm. So I didn't fight like I should have.
Yeah, but a specific question I'm interested in is, you know, something Mike and I had a really different perspective on, which was Marba's question, and you encouraged her to vote for Dural. I think Mike thought that that was you you know, trying to play up, you know, a less egotistical side of yourself, a very social side of yourself, to, you know, quite a noble thing to tell her to vote for Doral. Whereas I thought maybe like you were kind of annoyed at Marva in that moment and kind of snapped at her because she insulted you. So how did you see that answer to her?
That tribal council went on, the runtime was a little over 3.5 hours. So this thing went on a lot more than you saw. So we were tired. Like we were just, as I said, I was so over it at that point. And when my bad decided to call my game, in the back of my mind, I know what I've done in this place. I know what I did here. And that was really insulting to me. So I was like, you know what? If you want to vote for Doral, vote for me. At the end of the day, I wasn't going to downplay it, attack Doral or anything like that. I know what I've done in this game. It did feel like a bit of an insult. So I did, it was a bit of a snapback because I didn't think she understood what I did there. She didn't understand the gravity of what had actually gone on in that game, but understandably so, because remember, the entire game I'd been hiding. I'd been trying to position myself as a follower, not a leader. I'd been trying to hide what I was doing in that game. So they obviously didn't see to what magnitude I was actually playing.
Okay, Shannon, you get a massage. I'll admit I was wrong on that one.
From you or from
so,
Rob?
On that note, you know, Jacques comes in. The very first thing he tells you guys is, Rob, Nicole, we're having a tough time separating your games, which came as a big surprise to those of us watching just because of what we saw between the two of you in the edit. Did you get a sense they would feel that way? And how did you feel about the way that Nicole was answering things, considering that even though you felt you were sort of exhausted and wanted to get through it, a lot of us were surprised at the way Nicole was addressing some of the things she was, some of her game during the jurors.
Yeah, definitely. The first half of that tribal council, I think Nicole was winning. And it was only towards the end where I just started getting fed up enough that I actually just owned up in the game. And I said, listen, I did this, I did that. I started just really opening up a lot. It helped. I was getting over it. I was getting tired. I was getting fatigued. So that barrier that I was so used to holding up. Remember, this whole game, I've been hiding myself in tribal council. When I come to tribal council, I put on a mask, and I'd gotten so fed up that mask was finally falling down. People were starting to truly see me, the ruthlessness that's inside of me as well. So luckily, it started breaking, and then they got to see the real person that was there the whole time. The mask broke away. So that, I think, what secured the win at the end is that I eventually walked in there and I owned my game, and actually I didn't care. I was like, no, I did this, I did that. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, were there things, you know, it went for 3.5 hours, so I'm sure there's a lot we didn't see. Was there anything that you wanted them to include in the edit more than they did? I mean, did you talk about maybe getting C-Pace off Idol or some of the other incredible moves that you did that we didn't see mentioned on the show?
I didn't bring any of that up. For us, when we watch it, this stuff, information is still fresh in your mind, and you know, you've seen it, you remember it. I forgot all those specific moves. The only one that really stood out to me was that the mic move. But I'd kind of forgotten myself all the real details, because remember, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I just want to get out of this game. So I did not say very much, not a lot. The only thing that I think was important that was cut out there was a little bit of the part where Dante actually does admit that, look, he stole the flint from me, and he accuses me of, look, you broke so easy, Rob. Yes, you made it this far. Yes, you did well. But I destroyed you just by taking the flint. So how strong are you really? I told him that, Dante, that I was not broken. I was just making sure you come for me so I could take you out. Yeah.
Mm.
So in spite of your exhaustion, I think you bring home a really great final argument where the big crux of your speech is Island of Secrets controlled the game and I controlled Island of Secrets. I know I talked to Nicole a bit about, you know, where when she started planning the stuff that she was going to say at the final tribal council. Was that something you had planned going in there saying, or did that just come up spur of the moment?
I actually assessed that earlier in the game, so it was something that was really in the back of my mind. I realized that we all went to the Island of Secrets wanting an advantage, expecting advantage, hoping the island gives us something. When I went there, I realized that I can actually use this island, and I can create my own advantage from this island. So the Island of Secrets controls the game, but I actually was the first to kind of realize that I can control the Island of Secrets. And I created my own advantage there. You know, as this game progresses, it's funny enough, I think Van also spoke about this. In the beginning, you kind of don't know what you can and can't do. you kind of think that, hey, wait, if I do this, it'll be like, okay, you're going too far, the producers are going to intervene. But as the game progresses, and each time you sort of, you do something and no one stops you, you kind of realize, whoa, I can do whatever I want here right now. No one's going to tell me not to do anything. I'm in full control of this game. And initially, when I came up with that advantage, I kind of thought that the producer would say, hey, Rob, whoa, you're cheating now. Say, wait, Rob, you're cheating now. You're not allowed to do this, et cetera, et cetera. But when I did it and I got away with it, it was like, oh, okay, wow, look, it does work. You can do whatever you want here. So, yeah, it helps.
Yeah. I mean, walking away from that final tribal council, was there still the mentality in your mind that you were the winner of Survivor?
I honestly, I thought I would get about 8 or 9 votes.
Right.
I did believe I'd won, and we all kind of had that feeling that I'd won the game. Yeah.
So then when you're watching it back, I would be really intrigued to hear about what your thoughts were watching it back, you know, with the audience as well. Because now you're seeing things from other people's perspectives. You know, this is where maybe you start to think about, oh, I thought all these people were playing extremely hard as I was. Maybe that's not the case. You're also getting some stuff from the fans as well, both the bad and the good, where you're getting, you know, called one of the greatest players ever. What was your reaction to watching your 39-day adventure back and having people experience it alongside you?
It was very therapeutical because when you come out of the game, remember, I didn't go to Ponderosa. I never got a chance to really have closure with, you know, the rest of the players in the game. And we aren't allowed to communicate with each other and stuff like that. So there's a lot of, you carry a story that you kind of realize that, wow, this was hectic. What happened in that island is absolutely incredible. And you want people to understand what you went through. That way you don't feel like you're suffering in silence or you're holding on to this. So it was really nice as the story started coming out, like people could understand why I came back broken as I was. Something they don't, you don't really find out is, I think the hardest part of Survivor is the reintegration back into society. Firstly, physically broken, you can't tell anyone why you look the way you do. Mentally, you carry a lot of scars. You feel like you betray these people. I felt a lot of painful CPA really, you know, that I carried after the game for a long time, and you don't have a chance to get that closure. So you end up in a very bad space. You carry a lot of weight all on your own. And yes, we do have access to psychologists, but I think I was a bit too proud to pick up the phone and say, look, I need a psychologist here, which is my own craziness. I don't know why I should have spoken to a psychologist, but I carried a lot of that weight on my own. So when the story does come out and people sort of understand what you went through, understand what you did, it's good because now you're not alone anymore. Suddenly people understand what you went through.
Yeah, I mean, it's never too late. And, you know, just because you won and dominated the game in every capacity doesn't mean it wasn't super hard on a really personal level. So I'm sure, you know, there would be, you know, no shame in talking to someone about that if this isn't enough of a therapy session for you. But unfortunately, we are not qualified even in anything, let alone therapy or Survivor technically. So we're just here doing things. But, you know, in getting to the reunion and seeing the votes, you said you thought you got 8 or 9. Who were you surprised to lose in of those votes?
I mean, definitely Steffi and Sipe. The two of them, that was a bit of a shock on my side. I mean, I could have expected Mabano to vote for me. I could have expected, yeah, Jacques. I could have seen that coming. Corbis, I could have even maybe seen it coming. But Steffi and Sipe was a real shock. I thought that those were guaranteed votes on my side.
I'm going to ask a very ignorant question here, especially as a non-African person. Can you talk a bit about the headdress that you wore to the reunion?
Okay. So I'm very proud of my culture. I'm very proud of where I come from, my heritage. I think it's, I want to showcase that. So to me, that was, you know, the jeans European, the shoes European, and then the leopard print, that's a very African print. It's known for African, you know, heritage. And that thing on my head as well, it's something that African people wear. And so it's sort of combining the two. So half of my body is European, half of my body is Zulu. That's what I wanted to show there. I wanted to show, when you just look at me, you must see who I am.
Yeah, I mean, the reunion was a big night for you, winning the game. You won fan favorite as well, and you won the chili. So that is the rare triple, you know, the first
triple
person,
crown.
Yeah, the first person to win the chili and the game, let alone, you know, fan favorite. So what was that experience like in winning fan favorite as well?
It was phenomenal, honestly. really, though, that I can undoubtedly say, until the moment I get married and subsequently the moment I have a first child, I can say that that was the happiest moment of my life that night. Honestly, the only thing that will ever trump that is the day I get married to the love of my wife, a very beautiful woman, and have my first child. I think that's the only moments that will ever trump that night.
Can we talk about the car for a second? We skipped over the winning the car for a month, but what was your reaction to it? And can you talk to me about the fate of that, I guess, second car, considering that you actually ended up winning a car that you can keep for longer than a month afterwards?
Yeah, it's better than nothing. I'm going to use the car, so I'm relocating to Joburg soon, and I'll use that car to just, you know, transport all my stuff up there. It's, you know, nice and big, and I can put mileage on it that I don't have to worry about it depreciating the value of the vehicle. So it's something. I mean, obviously, it would have been nice for them to actually give us the car like an Australian Survivor, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I feel like, are you relocating just to get some use out of that car? Because, like, look, relocating with a car you don't need is, like, a use for it. But I can't think of many other uses for it. So I feel like you're doing something specifically to get use out of that 1 month car.
No, I'm relocating. I'm from a very small town. Not much is actually happening there for me. And it would be dumb of me to stay there after all of this. So I need to sort of use this momentum. And the best place to use this momentum is in a city like Joburg, where things are happening. And I can be in the room with the right kinds of people to progress going forward. I have a lot of things I'm working on, a lot of ideas that I want to implement. So the best place to be is to be in Joburg.
Yeah, we do get a lot of car questions. I have a car question. Do they tell you which month, yeah, or do you at least get to choose the month that you get the car?
So they called me up and they said, look, Rob, we're ready to deliver your vehicle. You just let us know when you want it and where do you want it in the country. So they actually delivered it to Mpangeni, believe it or not. So they drove the vehicle down and it was all up to me. So I think even if at this point, if I didn't want the vehicle, they would still have held on to it until I wanted to take possession of the vehicle. But I currently am in possession of it now, yeah.
Oh my God.
That's good, because I was worried you'd like land from Samoa, you know, you'd land in the airport in Johannesburg and they're like, okay, your time starts now, here's your car, drive home.
And the 30-day one, it seems to be very flexible. I've got that one, but I haven't taken possession of the permanent vehicle yet. I'm still deciding what I'm going to do with that one.
That is honestly the strangest reward ever. I would just have to just sit with that for a second. Just how odd this is right now. Okay, so we've got a lot of car questions, which I think we've answered in full. Just a couple of other questions from the listeners. Jason Gates, who is my brother/intern, asked, was there ever a point watching the show at home where you thought you'd lost the game? Because sometimes we hear this from people who like walk out feeling confident, then you're watching it back and there's so many months that you doubt yourself. But you seem to have a pretty good confidence with your game. But was there any point where you felt like you might have lost it?
No. Because for me, a big indication that I've won this game was the billboard campaign. So that's something people didn't really pick up on. So I knew who the final three was. It was myself, Nicole, and Dural. And I was the only person in the billboards. So that to me was kind of a sort of very clear indicator that, okay, I think I really won this thing. So that was the definite thing that sort of secured it. And then obviously when I saw the edit, I saw how good it was. And I kind of realized that, yeah, I definitely won this game. There was never a doubt in my mind.
That's good, because I believe Leanne was also a billboard person, so I don't know if you could go off of that specifically.
Yeah.
The Hair of Nathan Twitter account, the famous account mentioned on the reunion, was very, very proud of our Twitter body part offspring, asked, do you think you would have been perceived as a bigger threat if Nathan was at the merge and possibly been targeted earlier? Is this something where, in hindsight, you're kind of happy Nathan left because it's obviously your game went the way that it did, or do you think you still could have dominated with him at the merge?
So Nate leaving when he did was actually a blessing in disguise, because if he had come in there, everyone knew that Nate and I were close, and the Saula numbers would have been far more. That means that Lame and Talo would have actually come together to take out Saula. But because Nate had gone, we weren't as threatening as we would have been had Nate been there. But the way I was going to counter that was that I was going to actually stage a fight between Nate and I, make it look like we don't get along anymore, something just happened, et cetera, et cetera. So half the tribe can become close with Nate. Toth, the tribe, becomes close with me, but secretly we share the information or we play them against each other and we take them out. I sort of had those sort of ideas in mind because I did know that if we walk in there as a united front, you know, the whole of Saula, they would have all turned on us. Saula, I mean, Taolo and Lame would have turned on Saula. So I needed to somehow, I was planning on somehow causing fractions between us to sort of hide, disguise that strength. But all in hindsight, yes, I'm glad Nate wasn't there. Would have been too dominating.
I mean, all you need to do is just have him get injured and have him blame you, considering he's probably going to, 3 minutes into the merge, I don't know, walk into a tree or something.
You would have found a way. Well, that's all the questions that I have. Rob, thank you for taking us through your entire game. It really was something to behold. You know, you can take our word for it as people who have watched, you know, close to 50, maybe, you know, I don't know, I never know the exact number, but I've watched a lot of Survivor at this point, all the international English-speaking versions, and your game was just incredible to watch and so considered at every point. Like, that amount of dominance was just crazy. So to get an inside glimpse into it is, I think, just something that's a real treat for us and hopefully for the listeners as well.
I really appreciate it, honestly. I've been listening to you guys for more than you've watched me, if you think about it, because each of your podcasts are 2 hours. You guys are listening to us for 1 hour. So I feel like I know you guys. I feel like I personally know you guys a lot because I've listened to so much of what you guys said. And I respect you guys' opinions so much because you understand the game better than most people. So to me, your opinions trumped everything else I would see on social media, et cetera, because I understood that you guys' knowledge of the game is unparalleled. So thank you so much for supporting me, Shannon, especially you from day one.
Yeah, I mean,
thank you, Rob. I mean, listen, to have us two goofballs, you know, be the people that you go to really does mean the world. And again, to repeat, Shannon, I mean, you really did play an outstanding game out there. And to get some introspection as to where you were coming from, you know, some of the moments there you struggled a bit, but a lot of the moments where you excelled. I mean, I know people certainly have opinions about the season and the way you played, but it was nothing short of masterful, in my opinion. And I'm happy you were able to enjoy what we had to say about your game, because we enjoyed just as much watching your game.
Thank you, Mike. Honestly, I genuinely appreciate it. You guys are phenomenal. If I ever come to the States or Australia, I'll definitely link up with you guys.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Well, you know, what is the hashtag? I've only written down one thing, and it's hashtag massage bet, which is a little creepy.
It has to be that. It's got to be that.
All right.
Listen,
well,
we're here to acknowledge some of the moments off camera in some of these deep dives. I love the Taolo 3.0 massage bet that never was, and maybe this will, much like Rob's created advantage might manifest in a future South Africa season, maybe a massage bet might actually come to fruition as well.
Well, if it goes well and not like in an ugly, ugly way. But Rob, where can people find you on social media to see what the true king of Survivor South Africa is doing online?
I'm most active definitely on Instagram. I'm going to try working on my Twitter and Facebook when I have time. So Instagram handle is Rob Bentley Survivor. If you just search for Rob Survivor, I'll pop up. So that's the best way to kind of plug in and know what I'm up to at most times.
Mike, are we giving him back at Rob Survivor if we find the password? Isn't that a chili prize?
I think so. I don't remember the password, but I think if I'm able to figure it out, then yes, you can take back. I don't remember if I took Rob Survivor or at Survivor Rob, but one of them is going to be yours.
Yeah, Rob Bendless. Yeah.
All right. Well, you can follow us at the moment at Survivor Rob, because we have that as well. But also
at Rob Survivor is the account of Mr. Now May Pointy Stick.
Please find the password. Follow me back. It's been months.
No.
I can't believe you lost that password. Like, you had one job, but anyway, you can
listen. I'm such a big Doral fan. I've been taking on his characteristics, and one of them includes losing a password in the ocean.
Like, that was the most Doral thing that you could have done, is to lose the password to this very valuable account that you like got from Rob, got it really quickly, and it was meant to be a cheesy prize, and now it's locked out forever without following me back. But anyway, follow at Survivor.
And Mike, I just wanted to let you know, Doral said I must tell you he loves you too. He's been enjoying the podcast, and he really loves you. He's really grateful for the support.
Oh my God! That is so nice! I have the biggest smile on my face. This is worth its weight in bananas. I'm so happy.
happy I'm here for this moment. This is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I feel like I've won Survivor and the car and a different car for a month and the cheesy. That's what this moment feels like to me. All right. Well, you can follow us at amikebloomtype, at Shannon Gates. Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world, unless you're just quitting to go find a row in the real world and just work on that friendship?
Yeah, I'm going out on a high note. I think I'm good now. I'm going to take a page out of Letitia's book and just like, this is the end for me. I'm done with all the experiences. I'm doing some coverage of Lost right now with the great Josh Wigler, going to another island to do some really fun coverage of that. We're revisiting an episode every week. But I am firmly into the U.S. Survivor now. Season 39 has just started. I got to go out to Fiji, a hop, a skip, and a jump from where Rob was in Samoa to watch the first few days of that. And now that it's finally happened, I can speak fully about it. And I am so excited to get people's opinions on what I thought was a really good premiere. And hopefully it'll be a really good season moving forward. Rob, I know you were a fairly new to Survivor besides South Africa. Do you have any interest now that you're sort of like a Survivor winner of checking out any of the OG US seasons outside of Richard Hatch?
Most definitely. I'm hooked. I am thoroughly enjoying Australia Survivor. I just haven't finished it yet. Unfortunately, I do know who wins, though. But I mean, I loved David and Luke's game. It was just fantastic. So I am getting drawn into the international Survivor community. So I will be watching Survivor America. I'm in there now. And I hope to one day actually play internationally. I would love to go up against some of these American or Australian players.
Yeah, I think that's the dream, that they finally get that going, do like a Olympics of Survivor, which I will 100% cover if they ever do that. But you guys should all subscribe to the International Survivor Hapups feed, because there's still so much more coverage. So in your feed right now for Survivor South Africa, you have this podcast that you're currently listening to. You've got Mike, Jacques, and Nicole, Jeff and CPay to come. And I don't know if I've announced this yet on a podcast or a Survivor South Africa podcast, but LaRue Buerta is coming on at a point as well. Ooh. Who's the series director of Survivor South Africa. So that will be a must listen, someone we've really wanted to chat to on the podcast for a long time. And we might even get Nico. So a lot is happening as we go into month 5 and 6 of Survivor South Africa coverage right now.
It's going to be a half year covering this season.
And it's all so good. Like, no regrets.
Don't stop. Please going. Like, keep getting Nico. I mean, I can only imagine Nico LaRue with you guys. That would be fantastic. We'd be listening all along.
Yeah,
I mean, at a certain point, I think we're just going to start. We're going to start over again from episode one and just go around one more time.
Make it a yearly thing. I love it. I always, as I said, like, I track how long it's been based on how old Mike's kid is, because they started around the same time.
Yeah, I think if you have a car you want to give my kid, I think he's like 17 at this point by the time the season's over. So.
Yeah, if you have any spare cars, no, but those are podcasts I'm very excited for. So subscribe so you don't miss any of that. Follow us so you can get all the question threads and the announcements of that. Australian Survivor, as Rob mentioned, the post-season coverage is going on with that as well. Luke and Pia are in your feeds. Janine and Baden coming next week. So a lot of amazing post-season coverage for both of these seasons. But Rob, chatting to you was a true delight, and we're so glad that we finally got you on the podcast to chat to you.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm really honored. Thank you.
It was an honor for us. Yeah, again, loved your game. Congratulations on the chizzy. A visor will be coming to you. We're working on that. But thank you so much, Rob. Thank you to you, Mike, as always, as well. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And we will see you on the next deep dive. Bye.